Welcome back, Steve Bertrand. Isn't it nice to have Steve Bertrand back?
Absolutely.
We missed him tremendously. How do you feel, Steve? Is everything good?
Yeah, we're coming along.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Spoken like a true grandpa. We're coming along.
It's, you know.
The collective we.
It is a day-by-day process, isn't it? I mean, some days are probably better than others.
Yeah, this one was going pretty well right up until the sports there.
Oh, well. That's
no, but it's
sports
great.
Sports or traffic?
It's great to be back. No, it went downhill at the beginning with sports. You just weren't listening.
Oh. We were prepping.
No, it's great to be back. I've missed you guys, and I really sincerely want to thank everyone here in the newsroom. You know, everyone's got a full-time job anyway, and they've been doing extra duty while I've been out. So
we got calls and texts every day from people wanting to know.
I see them,
you know,
now. They want
status.
Ryan back. Is
well,
that it?
There's been some of that, right. But, you know, you're going to get that.
Well, I do feel a little guilty because on Friday when Ryan was here, I read the text that said, when is Steve Bertrand coming back?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't mean any offense by that. It's just, you know, listen,
right.
Radio is a habit, and people get used to it. And, you know, I'm sorry it took a while for people to notice that Steve was gone.
You just did it again, didn't you?
Yeah, it's kind of fun, actually. Yeah. Welcome back. We love you.
Thank you.
But you have been here, of course, for the Wintrust business lunch, but a full day of work is
right.
tough when you're recovering from surgery. So we are glad to have you. If there's mm-hmm. anything we can do to make to ease your reentry into the work week, let someone else know.
I was going to say I'd go for a cup of coffee, maybe, but.
You want to do that one to get him a cup?
Sure. Where
yeah,
do you
we'll
want it from?
Yeah, we'll get you some.
I like the one that's furthest away.
All right.
Oh, well, that's, God,
that's
welcome
sure.
back to the slams.
All right, that's easy. Earlier this morning, Wendy, you said something that reminded me, and I don't know if this is one of those men versus women thing, but I noticed that women's approach to this is far different from men's. I'll preface it by giving you an example of what I experience quite often at home, and then I'll bring you into it. When my wife purchases anything of any consequence, anything over, say, $15, $20, $25, she'll bring it home and show it to me and not tell me how much it costs, but how much she saved. You know, she'll say, this shirt is normally $45. We just saved $30. You know, so it's not what we spent. It's what we saved. You know, guys never approach it that way. I know you had an event at Arlington Racetrack over the weekend. You told me how much money you won, $90, which is a pretty good day at the racetrack.
Well, that was in the last race. I had won $15.50 before that, $15.50.
Right.
I won $4 before that,
yeah.
And then $90 was my last
that's
race.
Pretty, that's a pretty good day at the racetrack. So all told, with all those victories, you're up well over $100, right?
Well, no, that's
no.
when I said I spent about $100, so I'm still 10 up. But listen, you really are not fun to come into work to.
But the lead is you. When all is said and done,
I'm up.
Are you up or how much?
All right, $90.
Yeah.
$15.50.
Yeah.
And I think I won $14.
So $119.
Okay, and I spent $100, and at least 20 of those were just money I gave the kids. So I'm totally up.
You are up. Okay.
How do you figure that's not up if I spent $100 and I won
$119? Because you jumped in and you said, I won $90 at the racetrack, which you did.
I did in the last race.
But I'm saying a guy wouldn't come in with that. A guy would come in with the bottom line of how much you ended up with.
Right, exactly.
We don't care. Girls just, like, listen, if we break even, we've had fun all day betting bets.
But that's not what you said.
Right.
I won $90 on my last race. That was the payout. If you want to get technical, it was a $20 bet. So I only won $70.
Right. But you know what I mean, right? Like, let's say...
Just rain on my parade.
Hey, Bill.
I go once a year to the racetrack.
Yeah, Steve?
Bill, you went to the track over the weekend. How'd you do?
I won $10,000.
Wow, that's great.
On one race. I mean, I lost $10,000 per race on every other race, but I won $10,000.
Right, that was pretty even then, huh?
Yeah, well, not really.
All the men at the Arlington yesterday were very nice and very excited for me. They weren't like you saying, well, how much was your bet? What are you walking away with? Are you up or down?
But don't you think that that has to do kind of with the way men are wired versus the way women are wired?
No,
that
I think
a guy...
you're crabby.
No, I'm not crabby. I just think it's funny. Like it took me a while to get used to that with Terry because for a while I thought we were making crazy amounts of money every time she went shopping. But then I would see our Visa statement
well,
said otherwise.
It would have been worse.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
It was a day of fun.
Sure. Well, I know that. And how did you decide when you would pick a horse? It was based on what exactly?
I have to tell you, and I was here, Amita Health, Alexian Brothers, Women and Children's Hospital, had a benefit, and it was very fun. And they had an expert there, a betting expert from Arlington, mm-hmm. that was going table to table to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was... Letty, who was a nurse in the child life services department. They call her the baby whisperer because when a baby is in distress and it's a newborn, it can't tell you what's wrong, and she has a way of soothing the baby. So we were calling her the horse whisperer by the end of the day.
Wow.
She was like 4 for 4 and won. She put maybe, I think, $50 down or $20. She walked away with $300.
That's pretty good.
And she was just picking the percentage of the wins that the jockey had.
Oh, well, that's very
I go by the name like everybody else. And then I felt so terrible because my husband is named Jim, and in the last race,
yeah.
There was a horse called Gorilla Panic, and I was going to do it in honor of Harambe, but that horse was scratched.
Oh.
So then I went with the jockey and won with that one. And I feel bad because as the horses are racing and Just Jim is moving up, and I'm like, oh, my God, Just Jim. I didn't even bet on that. And I kept saying voting, by the way.
No,
I didn't vote on Just Jim. I am a very inexperienced gambler, Bill.
But sometimes that can be that's the best thing because people just they analyze the data like crazy. I know a couple of people who are horse racing experts, and they never win.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know what to do. I just...
We had this, when we were both at WLS, there was a guy that we brought in every year, and he had a clever nickname and stuff, and it wasn't a horse whisperer, but it was along those lines. And after 5 years, I said, you know, we've had you in 5 years, and you've never picked a winner. It's coming. Oh, all right.
It's just fun, and it's fun to watch the horses, and I didn't realize that an ambulance drives around the outer portion of the track. For every race.
Yeah.
I never saw that before.
Yeah.
Is that, it's not for, if the horse falls, it's if a jockey falls off, right?
I think
right?
That's, yeah.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah.
The
yes.
jockeys will be fine. I'm worried about the horses breaking their legs. They're so spindly.
There have been some horrific incidents.
I know.
I think I was at one.
Did you see
one? I almost never. I've only been to the track one or two times, and you know, my memory is that they actually put down a horse.
Yeah.
Well, everything went without a hitch, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was a fun day, and I am technically... I won 119. I spent probably 100, because now I got to think about the valet...
No, you don't.
I know, but I know how much money I came with.
Gasoline to get there.
I'm just saying.
And a sandwich.
No, the food was included. know how much money I came with.
Yeah.
And I know how much money I have, and then there was valet, and the kids' bets. So I'm up at least $10.
Now, kid betting is illegal.
Well, not if parents bet for them.
All right.
No, they say you have to be 18 to vote. I mean, see what I mean? I am just very inexperienced.
You do have to be 18 to vote. You're right. That's all right.
Well, they were voting on horses. Who was going to be, who's ahead in the poll?
Oh, Dickie. All right, we'll take a quick break and then a lot more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know, that test noise is annoying, but it's not as bad as the Blame It on Rio song that we've been playing all week.
We're not playing it.
Are we done with it? Is it done?
I don't know. We have to stop. All weekend long, I was singing that. A little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know. It's very contagious.
You did this to people.
Very contagious. I apologize to everybody. Did you get to see? Here it is.
Oh, come
just a little, just a refresher.
You made me do it, Wendy.
All right, now play this, and do you have the EAS test? Can you play them side by side?
That would be beautiful.
Decide which is more annoying.
What do we care?
One and the same. They're one and the same. Did you see any of the Olympics over the weekend? Did you watch anything?
I just saw bits and pieces. No, not a sit-down watch. No.
Nothing? Steve, did you get to see any of the Olympics? No? Not you either?
You did?
You know...
You're not really Mr. Olympic.
I'm having a hard time with it. I don't know. I love sports. I just love sports. But for some reason, I cannot get into it. And I keep trying and trying and trying. And it just doesn't do anything for me.
Can I say my wife, Sharon, is really into it? And I'm having the most fun watching with her.
Because she's so sweet. Excited by it.
She, you know, she's pretty excited about it. Just the comments she's making and, you know, the way we're watching and stuff. But
I don't know why I don't like it. All the elements are there. It's everything I should like. It's
No, it isn't. You don't really like watching gymnastics or swimming.
No,
or...
yeah, I guess there's that. But, like, I saw, I accidentally saw Usain Bolt. The guy's a machine. I've never
Who
seen anything. He's the sprinter,
the world's fastest man.
Like, that's impressive to see the world's fastest man. There was a time, okay, so they all, obviously, it's a race. They start evenly, and within a fraction of a second, he's looking back at him, and he's smiling. Like
He was looking aside during a semifinal. It was amazing. Yeah.
Is it just like a casual glance? Like, right. Is anyone even close? Nope.
Looking around, smiling. He made it look so easy.
Yeah.
He was, like, laughing about it.
You know what's amazing to me is when and we were watching the women run, too, when they go into slow motion, they're like avatars.
Right.
I mean, there is no deviation in their movement at all.
Even
it's amazing the form they have.
When Bolt was running yesterday.
Perfect name, by the way.
Isn't it? It really is.
I got a Bolt.
It is. The way his legs move, it looks like a precision machine, like on a an assembly line where the same thing would keep pressing over and over.
Like
that's how he is.
They're like pistons.
Yeah.
That's so. You liked that?
I did. One of my daughters made an interesting comment yesterday. We were all watching it together, and this was her idea. This is Kylie's idea for the Olympics. Future Olympics might try this. She said they should have in one lane in every event, whether it's racing or swimming, whatever the event is, they should have one normal person so that we at home realize just how fast these guys are.
That is a great idea.
It
I'm
is
not
a good
kidding.
Idea.
So you can do, everybody likes the visual comparison.
Right. Right.
That's a great idea.
Like, I know that the guys that Bolt running against are also some of the fastest in the world. So even though I know it's fast, I can't comprehend it. But if you put a stockbroker in there, like on one of the lanes, you go, look at how much faster those guys are than the stockbroker.
Even, someone who runs, but not Olympic ready.
Right.
Like if you put, some guy named Joe in a white t-shirt eating a donut while he's running, that's not going to work.
But a guy who's
you got to find the guy who at the bar is always talking about how fast he is.
Right. That guy. Yeah. Put that guy in. And let's see how fast he is or he isn't. Or even do it like a lottery system. Like if you, say you bought a ticket to the event and then right before the event they go, number 703, please report to the starting block. That's kind of cool, right?
That is the best idea which she should pitch.
It's a good marketing plan.
Because then, when you say, when you talk about an abundance of something, it's like you could fill up three Titanics with that. You like to have some kind of comparison that you can get.
Yeah.
I love that.
I wanted to make fun of her idea, but the more I thought about it, and then people would probably root for the underdog. I don't think they would stand much of a chance, I don't think, but it would add an extra layer of excitement to the event.
And imagine the excitement it would be for that random person. It would make attendance go up.
Right.
If you wanted to swim, maybe you're great at butterfly. I'm going to go because my number could be pulled in the raffle.
Yeah.
I love idea. How do we get the Olympic Committee
I'll send
on the
it
air?
To the Olympic Committee, and those people cannot be bought. By the way,
I was going to say they'll talk to you. You have to send them an envelope.
Right.
Oh, stop it.
Right. Please don't think the Olympic Committee can be bought because there's no evidence of that at all.
Is this Marita?
It is.
Hi, Marita. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. All right. Bill had explained that Mr. Lightning Bolt was
Usain
looking.
Bolt.
Okay. He was looking around. You have some more information on that.
Absolutely. The swimmers do it. The rowers do it. Anytime you have prelims and semis, you only need to be first or second in your heat to advance to the next level, to the next bracket. So you want to preserve as much energy as possible. And that's why you look around to find out if you're first or second.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You want to see how you're standing. That I get that.
And then that way you have only your fastest people in the final heat.
Right. And no one's going to touch him. I don't know enough about him. I just know how fast he is. He's the fastest. No one's going to come close, right?
Right. He's amazing.
Yeah.
See, you do like the Olympics. Thank you, Marita. We appreciate your call.
I want to. I keep wanting to, but I know I'm a rarity in this. I know everywhere you go, people are talking about how wonderful the Olympics are, and I love that. But when I watch, I just, for some reason, I don't know why, it just doesn't affect me the way it's supposed to.
I don't know if you heard my sports at 10. There was a world record today set in the women's hammer throw.
Oh, all right. Well, that's not
that
exciting.
That doesn't move you at all.
They should throw Mike Hammerneck. That would be really impressive.
Right. All right, let's suggest that.
The women's Mike Hammerneck throw?
Yes. That would be great.
That's never happened.
I got to tell you something. That Blame It on Rio song, yeah. Bill, Wendy, please don't stop playing that awful Blame It on Rio song. It's so bad, it's good. I'm going to make it my husband's ringtone without telling him.
That's going to cause a divorce.
There was another one. You may not be done with Blame It on Rio, but I am. And then I caught myself singing Blame It on Rio under my breath at work on Friday. Thanks, Bill and Wendy.
Thank Bill.
I was singing it yesterday. Crazy.
I know. It's hard to escape, isn't it?
All right, well, this is the theme. We can't get rid of it.
No, it's ours to keep. All right, a break, some news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. Since we're talking about the Olympics, a story that definitely needs to be addressed is what's been going on with Hope Solo. Now, we told you when the Olympics first started that some of the crowd there in Rio weren't exactly fans of Hope Solo's. She had made several remarks about the safety issues that were taking place there in Rio. And they were chanting things about Sika. They sang a song, the soccer song, but they added Sika to it when she'd take the field.
That really wasn't a big slam. They could have come up with a better thing. They were just chanting Zika when she took the field.
Yeah, right. Yeah, how about that? All right, so now on Friday, the U.S. Women's soccer team is playing Sweden. The game ends in a 1-1 draw, and then Hope Solo comments about the opposing team afterwards. Listen to what she said. Again, these are the words of Hope Solo, the controversial goalie of the U.S. women's team. Very controversial. Here's what she said. We played a creative game. We had many opportunities on goal. We showed a lot of heart. We came back from a goal down. I'm very proud of this team. We played a bunch of cowards. The best team did not win today. I strongly, firmly believe that. Sweden dropped back. They didn't want to open play. They didn't want to pass the ball around. They didn't want to play great soccer, entertaining soccer. It was a combative game, a physical game, exactly what they wanted, exactly what their game plan was. We had that style of play when Pia was our coach, the former U.S. coach, now coaching Sweden. I think it was very cowardly, but they won. They're moving on, and we're going home.
Why is she still on the Olympic team?
She's a really good goalie.
I don't care. Her sportsmanship, that's part of playing the game. These are world athletes.
I know. I think the way to play a situation like that where the U.S. women's team was heavily expected to win. They were odds on favorite to go all the way, and they didn't go all the way. But the way to play it is say, hey, we gave it our all. They showed us up. We were hoping for a different style of game. It's up to you can play a more offensively minded game or defensively minded game or find some kind of a balance. She wasn't pleased with what Sweden put out on the field, but too bad.
Everybody was tweeting over the weekend too, members of the U.S. soccer team that were saying Hope Solo's comments do not represent all of ours,
right,
by the way. And
it, right.
According to USA Today, just an hour ago, she is unlikely to receive an official International Olympic Committee sanction over her comments. She's not going to be punished in any way.
Wow.
That's wrong. I mean, part of being at the Olympics is being a great athlete. Part of being a great athlete is to have sportsmanship.
Right, right.
That is a terrible display.
You know how at the end of... Oh, go on, Steve.
Well, okay. I mean, she shot her mouth off and she lost and she's, you know, going home.
Right.
Who's the American swimmer? Was it Lily King who, you know, kept talking about the Russian woman, the cheater?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was bad-mouthing her.
Would you
punish her?
I think it's different when it's a solo act. If it, you know, you're competing against one other person, this brings the whole team down.
I would love to hear, I mean, as you mentioned, you're going to get comments now from other team members saying that was Hope Solo talking. I respect the fact that we lost. Actually, they didn't lose. They tied, but it ended up hurting them.
Why is it a tie? Why didn't they go for like an instant death kind of thing? Is that how
sudden death? I don't understand. I don't know the answer to that because I don't understand the rules of soccer. I just don't.
Kevin, they did?
I think it went to shootout, and that's when USA lost, I think.
Did they lose it in a shootout?
Yeah,
so it was 1-1. I know in regular soccer, like a game can end in a tie. There's a way for a game to end in a tie, but I don't know if at the Olympic level.
Yeah, they do penalty kicks, and that's how the U.S. lost.
They lost in a penalty kick.
In the elimination round, I think.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which means it was Hope Solo who let the goals in, right?
Right.
Hmm.
Right. You know how, like,
she's
at the end of a hockey game in the playoffs, like when your team is eliminated by another team in hockey, you see that long line of guys, and they all come out and they congratulate each other. Even guys that have been at each other's throats, sometimes for seven games, they're nice to the other team.
It's sportsmanship.
You beat us, and I'm sure there's always some hard feelings. How could there not be? But you don't see it there on the ice. But this just makes everybody look bad. It makes her look bad for sure.
She is just an attention craver, which I am too, so I totally get it.
Yeah.
But I try to do it in a nice way, not in a jerk way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
John, how are you?
Pretty good. Listen, I'm a soccer fan, so I know about soccer. This is a typical, what she's calling them cowards is ridiculous, and she's being a sore loser. But it's a typical soccer strategy when one team does not have enough much talent as another team to play defensively, to put all your people back in the defensive third of the field and hope for a tie. All playoff games, these are playoff games now in the Olympics once they get past the group stage. So then they go to overtime and a shootout if it's tied. So that's what they're hoping for.
It's like in the old days of
typical soccer strategy, and she knows that. She was just being, you know.
She's being difficult. She was being a baby.
They call them cowards is ridiculous because that's really a typical soccer strategy. It's nothing new. It's nothing, that Australia or they did that,
Sweden,
you know, is unusual. It's that's typical soccer strategy.
All right, John. We thank you,
Steve,
for
what were you going to say?
Up.
Well, like in the old days of basketball, it's the four corners.
Right.
And, you know,
you just don't want to give the ball up. You want to play back
and
keep
kill
the ball
the clock.
Yourself.
Kill
yeah,
the
why
clock.
Not? I'm always surprised. Again, I go to hockey. When a game is close, I'm always surprised that a hockey team just doesn't keep the puck way back toward their own goal, you know, almost like you saw with the soccer strategy, just to eat up more time.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why you and I aren't coaching anything.
But it sure does. It doesn't indicate to me any sign of cowardice.
No.
It's just a strategy, and in this case, it paid off, you know? So why not?
Cowards or not, they won.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Who cares what you are?
Right.
And Steve, you mentioned Lily King, and I, you know, had to do some research because I wondered if Lily King participated in Lillehammer. But no. What's the Lily King story? She actually won the 100-meter breaststroke Monday night.
I'm not sure. It was Lily King who... She was competing against a Russian swimmer, and the Russian swimmer had been busted for cheating. I mean,
the Russian swimmer, Yulia Efimova, had been banned from competing in the Olympics.
She Efimova.
Right. That's how she lost. If she had just stayed straight instead of effing over.
Right. Then you got a different outcome.
So Lily King was, you know, she's being heralded for saying, you know, she shouldn't be in the Olympics. She was, she cheated before. All of it's true.
But Lily won, so why wouldn't she just keep her mouth shut?
Well, she was saying it before the end, before the race, and then she's, you know, but her point is, look, this person was
tested
busted
positive,
for doping
yeah.
earlier in other events.
Yeah.
And she was asked, should that be the death penalty for the Olympics? And some people said yes, blah, blah, blah. All I'm saying is she was bad-mouthing another athlete who had qualified.
For good reason.
I know, but she had qualified for this event. She was being publicly critical of another team. I'm just saying it's the flip side of the Hope Solo
it
story.
Is.
And if you start punishing people for speaking out against other athletes, you'd have to probably do it against her, too.
Yeah.
That was my point.
Yeah. It's just bad policy. If a team shows you up and beats you like Sweden did to the U.S., you almost, I mean, they weren't cheating. The tactic they used was perfectly legal.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I don't understand, and that's what I don't like.
Yeah.
It's poor sportsmanship. It's whining, basically.
It is. It's interesting. It comes off, we didn't discuss this on the show. The Cubs have an outfielder. Tommy Estela is his name. And he got sent to the minors. So instead of showing up to the minor league team, he just says, you know what? Then I'm not going to play baseball anymore. I'm just going to think about retiring. He doesn't show up to the minor league team. This was last week.
That's kind of a stupid move, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
I love watching Tommy Estela play, too.
He's fun to watch.
He's a nice hitter.
He's fun to watch.
So you seem like you're halfway in agreement with him.
I was trying to figure out, and I had a long discussion with a friend of mine about this yesterday. If you're him, this makes you look bad. Because then,
yeah.
You know, because you're not playing by the team's rules. You're playing by your own rules. But I also see, I think he's about, would you say he's 27 years old, Steve?
Yeah, 27.
If I'm him, I go, because like I said, he's considering retiring. You go, maybe baseball's not the way I want to spend my life anymore. If the team I want to play for, he said he doesn't want to play for any other team but the Cubs. If that's the team I want to play for and they don't seem to want me or need me, maybe I should find a second career, you know? So I don't think what he's doing is right, but I understand his reluctance.
No passion. If he had passion, he would do what he's told. He would try and get better and come back up.
A-Rod just quit in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
You know, he retired. He said
he's a coward.
Do you think he's a coward?
No, I totally don't. I
mean, although he may get picked up now by the Florida Marlins. Did
I
you
saw
see that?
That.
Really?
So there's a chance he may play for the Marlins.
So, I mean, it's kind of Estela's decision to make. It's just,
right.
I feel for, you know, he's 27, man. You know,
he's young.
He would be back up probably later.
He would be. When the rosters expand to 40... He'd be back up in a few weeks.
He just hits the ball.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like, come on, starting out in radio, you work the overnight shift and you hope for something better.
Sure.
And if you just say, forget it, I'm not going to do overnights, I'm going to go do something else, you'd never advance with any job.
All right, so that plays into the long hand of all this, which is...
Which, by the way, if we get moved to overnights, I'm totally quitting.
Are you going to quit? Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, so what I'm saying is... With these two stories, with Hope Solo calling the other team cowards, and with Estela saying, oh, yeah, well, I only want to play in the big leagues. I don't really want to play in the minor leagues. Is this a product of what we now have? You know how we're always talking about how everybody gets an award now. If you're playing Little League or you're playing soccer as a kid, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody wins. So is that the end result? Is that now we're producing a bunch of athletes who only want to win and nothing else. They only want to be on the big league team and they only want to have a championship and nothing else will work for them. You know what I mean?
There might be a correlation. I don't know. A sense of entitlement. I don't know. I just know if it's something you want, you work hard and you do what is necessary. If you're not up for the big league and you're back down to the farm league, you work on it and you get better and you try your darndest.
Right.
Otherwise,
well, he's 27. I mean, so that's probably moving toward the end of his career anyway.
Well, then go out trying. You've gone this long. Why? What's a couple more years, and you can still 30's still young.
Sure. Well, but
not
but
in baseball
not
years.
In,
in
by
the
baseball
minor leagues.
Years, that's
yeah. But it looks like baseball is not going to be.
Yeah.
If he doesn't come on, it's a catch 22. If he doesn't want to be anywhere else,
he could catch 22. He caught 23 sometimes.
His best season.
He was so good that
year.
Oh,
boy, what a year. Oh.
Just don't give up.
Don't give up.
As Kate Bush and Peter Gabriel once sang.
So true. Quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. A little bit of Olympic talk. You just mentioned, what's her first name? Is it Yulia?
Yulia Efimova.
Yulia Efimova, who is a swimmer from Russia. We were already talking about Usain Bolt, the world's fastest man. I have found some of the other stranger or funnier names of the Olympians. Can I share them with you?
Yeah, but I want to change Snyder to Efimova.
Isn't that a great name?
Yeah.
I think that name has a lot of power to it. In the Netherlands, there is a rower or a rowist, a person who rows?
A rower.
A rower? All right. His name is Sjord Hamburger. That's not that unusual. I would think that's a fairly common name, Hamburger.
Wouldn't you follow him around and put a piece of cheese on his head all the time?
Sure, make him a cheeseburger. There was a football player named Chris Hamburger. I remember I had his football card when I was a kid. I think he played for Cleveland, Chris Hamburger.
That's just funny.
In Japan, there's a volleyball player, and her name is Yoshi Takeshita.
What's funny about Yoshi?
I don't think it's that funny, Steve.
Yoshi!
I don't think it is that funny.
Thank you. By the way, was that not a good Yoshi, Kevin?
That was a pretty good Yoshi.
Great Yoshi.
Her last name is spelled Takeshita. Yoshi Takeshita. She is a Japanese volleyball player.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, can't stop going. In Bahrain, they have a long-distance runner, and his name is Hassan Mahboob. Hassan Mahboob.
There was that store or restaurant named Mahboob.
It was on Devon. It was a hair cuttery.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Mahboob.
We called them, and they didn't find it amusing at all that that was their name.
We sure did.
We did, but they did not. I think this is my favorite name of all the U.S. Olympic athletes this year. See, now, there were better ones in Sochi. I have some of the ones from Sochi that I can read if we have time. In France, there is a long-distance runner, and his name is Gaylord Silly.
I like Silly.
That's a pretty nice name, Gaylord Silly.
You should change your name to Bill Silly. Billy Silly.
Billy Silly. Do you think that would give me more credibility or less? Be honest. About the same.
About the same.
I don't think it would change at all.
Billy Silly coming at you.
That's a million-dollar idea. In China, there's a, now again, a person who competes on the trampoline, would they be a trampolinist? What would you call a person on
jumper.
The trampoline? A jumper.
Yeah,
there's a jumper in China. Oh, I think this is a very interesting but unfortunate name. His name is Dong Dong. Two dongs, no waiting, Wendy. Dong Dong is a trampolinist in China. Gaylord Silly's making fun of his name right now.
And we shouldn't be making fun of ethnic names. We're not. We're just making fun of silly names.
And just so you know, it looks like Dong Dong took silver.
Did Dong Dong take silver?
Dong Dong took silver.
Excellent. Good news.
I really like my job. Could you be careful?
In Jamaica, there is a sprinter. And
named
his name,
Yaman.
No, that would be better than his. Listen to his name. Gavin Smelly.
Oh.
That's unfortunate. S-M-E-L-L-I-E. Gavin Smelly is a Jamaican sprinter.
Oh, you need to change that name.
That's not good. And can I get one more in really quick? This is an unfortunate name also. In South Korea, there is a pole vaulter, and his name is Kim Yoo-suk, which you're not allowed to say in the newsroom because Kim Gordon gets very upset. even if Kim Yoo-suk won the gold medal, they would not announce that in the news because Kim Gordon would weep.
It's okay if she says it.
I guess if she says it, it's
really weird. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Double standard. All right.
Well, thank you for enlightening us. This has been Billy Silly's Olympic report.
All right. A quick break and then some news, some real stuff. Bill and Wendy, WGN. In the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are going to be friends.
It's Bill and Wendy. We're friends.
Yep.
I'd have your back for something. I'm a good friend.
Yes.
We don't hang out,
no.
But I care deeply for you.
Sure.
What about you with me?
You're all right.
That's what I figured. A lot of times you have friendships and you don't know if they're mutual, so we're about to find out. Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White is on the line with us, and she is the professor and chair of the Department of Counseling, Adult and Higher Education at NIU Northern Illinois University right here in DeKalb, Illinois. Hi, Dr. Suzanne. How are you?
I am well, Wendy. Thanks so much. Good morning.
Good morning. It appears I am a better friend than Bill is to me.
By far. Not even close.
I like to look out for him. He likes me to go in the elevator first in case the elevator should fall.
Yes. That's what friends do.
I mean, I really thought he was a good friend, in all seriousness. There are friends that you think you're pretty tight with, and then ultimately, you realize that maybe they're not such a good friend. Why don't you build on this a little bit?
Yeah, it's really interesting. In a recent study, it turned out that only about half of the friendships that we perceive we have with people actually are mutual friendships.
Half.
And a lot of times we kind of project. We assume we want people to like us, and unless we have evidence to the contrary, we're likely to assume that people like us as much as we like them.
How can half?
That seems
that
startling.
So high.
It is an amazing number, but if you think about how you define a friendship, you know, there are levels of friendship. We have acquaintances, then we have friendships of convenience, we have activity friends, and sometimes our perception of what a friend is or what a friend would do for another may be so far off the mark for another person that what we think is, you know, oh, they're our awesome best friend. We see them every Tuesday when we go to spin class, but they may be thinking, you know, spin class is a tiny part of my life, but, you know, my good friends are the ones I hang out and get together with for drinks or for lunch.
But now, so conversely, I have to tell you that I have some friends that I've been friends with since sixth grade, Bill since first grade,
yeah,
or
since
kindergarten.
First grade. Yeah.
And those are the friends that if something's really going wrong in my life, I can ask their advice. I can open up with them. So that's how, in my opinion, you can determine whether or not it's a true friend.
You know, you're right about that. Friendships are like these little mini social exchange economies. And when we start out getting to know someone, we're both kind of having to invest, to ante up in the friendship. It doesn't just magically happen usually. We have to put a little bit into the relationship, and do they meet what we put in? Are the stakes getting higher? And sometimes friendships that are built up over time, over years, your friends have proven themselves to you through the decades. And so you no longer keep a scorecard saying, well, I did this, but they did that. There's no more tit for tat. You just know that you're going to get back what you need from the relationship without worrying about the scorecard between you and a friend.
Suzanne, a woman I used to work with told me this, and please tell me she's wrong. She said in every relationship, whether it's two friends or a romantic relationship or even a husband and wife, in every relationship, there's one giver and one taker. That
right.
can't there's- be right, can it?
Well, you know, there's another way of looking at it. There's someone who invests more in the relationship than the other person. There's someone who, and the person that invests less, the taker, actually has more power in a relationship than the giver does. And it's something you see working as a counselor with married couples and couples in general and families. There's always this measure of who has the power, and the person with the least investment in a relationship actually holds more of the power.
Say that again.
The person who has the least investment in a relationship generally has more power.
But in a good relationship, since we're talking about friendships, let's stick with friendships. Doesn't that change from not just day to day, but incident to incident? Don't you find yourself on both sides of it? It's like a fluctuating
yeah. give and take.
Yeah.
Right. It is, and that's what makes the difference between a good friend and then kind of those friends of acquaintance or friends of convenience, because you're not keeping score. So someone probably does give more today, but tomorrow they're going to need you to be there for them when they send up the SOS call. So right, but there, you know, in early relationships, there's going to be one person who's generally more invested than the other, and that's when we get burnt, when we're giving a lot and feel like we're not getting back what we're giving. But in long-term friendships, your friends from sixth grade, you know they're going to be there for you
sure.
when you call out.
Yeah, but we mentioned long-term friendships, so my question that I pose to you, let's just say the friend expert, Dr. Suzanne Deggs White, can you make new friends?
You know, you mean throughout, we can make new friends, but over time, the older we get, the fewer good friends we're likely to have in our life. But sometimes, you know, there are people that you meet and right away you just kind of hit it off. And it's kind of like love at first sight. Sometimes there's friendship at first sight. Somebody gets you and you know they get you. And it can be amazing when you're an adult and you have this really brand new close friend who you just really enjoy being around. It's, I think about, there was a little online video about two elderly women who met each other at a retirement home and became best friends. And it was, you know, they're both in their 90s. So it's never too late to make new friends.
All of my best friends are women in their 90s. What's wrong with that?
There we go. Nothing's wrong with that. Nothing's wrong with that.
That's because you're a taker.
Yes, I am. I am. All right. So what is the best way? Let's say you're in one of these friendships and you say to yourself, boy, all I do is help that guy out. All I do is come to his aid and rescue all the time, and I'm not really feeling it on the other end. What's wrong with just cutting bait and going, this friendship's not working out anymore?
Hey, sometimes that's the best thing to do. When some of us are going to be really upfront and say, I feel like I've been putting in more than you have in the relationship, and it just doesn't feel good anymore. Others of us are going to be unreachable. A lot of times people will stop answering their texts.
Yeah.
They won't be available. And really, if it's a friendship that's, kind of newish and you feel like, it seems like they're always busy now, sometimes it's good for us to take the hint and step back from the pursuit. Because, in bad romantic relationships, there can be a pursuer and a pursued. And
sure.
Sometimes you've got to take the hint, like, they're just not into me. And when a friend just isn't that into you, unless there's some significant reason, if you've crossed a line or if you've maybe hurt that friend and need to address that, sometimes we have to acknowledge not everyone, not every friend will be that forever friend.
Do you ever want to say, either to that person or just to yourself, I'm going to give this guy one more chance. This guy gets one more chance, and if this one is out, then he's done. Do you ever say that?
Yeah, people, a lot of us will say that, but then a lot of us women are often suckers thinking, I want to help that person. I can help this person change. This person's going through a rough time. I can make their life better. Women, we're nurturers, and it's hard for a lot of us to say no more. Guys sometimes seem to have an easier time of backing off because their friendships are usually activity friends versus, deep, dark secret sharing, the gossip kind of friends.
Yeah, because men don't usually share their souls like women do. I can pick up a stranger on the street and share my soul with them, and
sure,
they usually walk away, but men don't do that.
No, men don't want to go deep. In fact, some research, in a book I was researching, when men are asked to think about their feelings or talk about their feelings, the pain center in their brains lights up as if they were experiencing physical pain. So men's friendships and their deep, dark, secret sharing, it's going to look a lot different than what women might do.
But maybe that's the difference for us between a true friend and just kind of a residual friend. There's a circle of guys that I would say almost anything to. I wouldn't hold back in anything, but it's a select few,
Right. You vetted them. You know that you can trust them, because trust is really important in friendships. That trust and that mutual support. And if it's not a mutual relationship, or if they don't feel comfortable opening up to you, you're probably going to sense that it's not safe opening up to them. So that makes perfect sense.
All right. Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White on the line with us. You had mentioned that out of our friendships, 50% of them are not really our friends. And someone has just texted in, that 50% thing really hurts. I only have two friends, that means I only have one.
Oh, no.
No. That's no. We're not going to that place. If it's just in general, if you went into an office and said, which of your colleagues are your friends, you would probably overestimate how many of them were your friends. And friendship is based on two people both acknowledging the friendship exists. That's what the measure in the research study was, is that, list your friends, and then where two people both listed the other as their friend, that's the qualification of a friendship. So if the person that just texted in, if this person says these other people put them on the list, and they've got two friends. It's mutuality of a friendship has to be present, or the friendship doesn't exist.
I have two boys, and I'm not going to say which one says this to me all the time, but he always says, I don't have any friends. And then anytime we're out in public, everyone always says, hi. I said, people like hanging with you. It's just, it's a mutual thing. You have to put some effort in too. And if people call you and you don't want to go out, they stop calling you.
And that, that's sometimes kids have a harder time building friendships, especially today with the internet and the potential for online bullying and all the things that happen between kids. They happen at light speed, and so relationships can be a little scarier now than they were earlier. And it is, you have to put something into a relationship for the relationship to really exist.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have some listeners who have some friendship questions. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. We are chatting with Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, professor, Department of Counseling at Northern Illinois University. I was friends with a Husky once.
Oh.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
My father taught me many things here. He taught me in this room. He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Solid advice from the Corleone family, Wendy.
How about it?
Yep.
Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White is on the line with us, and she is a professor and chair of the Department of Counseling, Adult and Higher Education at Northern Illinois University. And you are also the recent author of Toxic Friendships. And I think, Bill, you were talking about that a little bit, too. If you know it's not a mutual friendship, it's time to bail, maybe.
Yeah. Don't you think, doctor, as painful as that can be, sometimes you just say to yourself, I'm not really getting as much out of this as I should be.
Absolutely, and there's nothing wrong with that. Not every friendship is meant to last a lifetime. So, you know, when the relationship's no longer giving back to you, if it were a romantic relationship, would you stick with a relationship where you weren't getting what you need?
No.
We have to honor our friendships the way we honor romantic relationships and protect ourselves.
Yep, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
All right. So friendships are something that you really need to work on. And I think people use the term friend very loosely. Like, I will listen to people and they'll go, oh, my friend at work. Are they really your friend or is it my coworker?
I think with how many followers do y'all have on Twitter? How many Instagram followers do you have? How many friends on Facebook? We've begun to measure friendship in a way that it never would have been measured before. And we feel that a bigger social network is better. But the limits to how many relationships one person can keep up is not, 722 followers. It's usually just two or three really good friends.
Well, doesn't that have to do with Facebook's wording? I mean, they chose to use the word friend when really, if the definition of a friend is what I think it is, Facebook's definition is very, it just means it's a blind acquaintance.
Yeah, it's blind acquaintance because I'm sure, all of us have friends on Facebook we've never met or
right.
friends of friends. And so we have this idea that we're all connected. And sure, we are all connected. We do, at light speed, we can communicate ideas, thoughts, pictures, images, sunset pictures 40 times over.
What you had for dinner?
Yeah, what we had for dinner. We can Instagram. Yeah, we know what it looks like to dine in fine restaurants. We know, we know these things, but we're not, it's more like information that's being shared. So really, rather than, friendships, it's almost like, instead of friends, it's almost like informants on Facebook. How many informants on Facebook do you have?
That's why, Suzanne, on Facebook, I've developed a test. About once a month, I ask all my Facebook friends if I can borrow money. I just throw out a sum of money.
Yeah, there you go.
And then you know who your friends are.
Well, you know who your friends are, and how many people whose pages you follow would you want to loan them to
right.
have there?
Right.
Friendship is, acquaintances, coworkers, colleagues. I mean, there are a lot of words we could use that are much more accurate than friend, but we've kind of twisted the word friend to mean anybody that we remotely could claim a connection to. 6 degrees of friendship, what can I say?
All right, I have to read a text that really makes me sad, and I hope I don't get anyone in trouble, but you've texted, so of course I'm going to read it. Listening to your program, I just realized that a friend of mine for the past 28 years is not really a friend. Mm. She's going through a bad divorce and has been living with me for several months, but I'm beginning to feel used, and she locks herself in her bedroom and really does not mix with the rest of us. That doesn't seem like a good friend.
No, it doesn't. It seems like someone who's needier than the other person, someone who's the taker, and it sounds like the person that texts has been a really loyal supporter and giver for many, many years. And it can be hard to say, I need to talk about this relationship. And we know that these conversations seldom end as well as we would like them to. But there comes a time when our resources are exhausted, we have to take care of ourselves so that we can be there for other people who warrant our investment.
So if you were counseling this listener, you would say it's time to bring this up and discuss this and maybe release her to her own business.
Put her on the waiver wire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There you go. It's sometimes we have to have unpleasant conversations and we have to really discuss these things because when the counselor, if they care more about the client's well-being than the client does, that's a bad thing. So when a friend cares a lot more about the friend than the friend cares about the relationship, that's not a good thing either. The investment you have to in maybe the friendship has run its course, or maybe the friend can't be a friend at this point. And you need to take a little break.
We only have a minute, doctor, but what do you make? There's a word that kind of came into play in the last 5 or 10 years, and the word is frenemy, combining the words friend and enemy, obviously. Is that accurate? That's a real thing, isn't it?
There are some people that we need to be friends with because they're part of our social circle, they're part of our work circle, whatever it might be. Because we can't, in toxic friendships, I talk about colleagues, so colleagues who are enemies, but you work for the same team.
Yeah.
So this exists. That, you know, sometimes our friends are not the kind of people we would really want to choose to spend time with. They may harm us, but if there's some greater reason to maintain the relationship, you sometimes have to learn where do you draw the line in the sand and make sure your boundaries are clear so you don't let yourself get walked on or otherwise hurt in the relationship.
All right. Her ongoing blog is going on at Psychology Today. Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, she's a professor at Northern Illinois University, also the author of Toxic Friendships. I think in a nutshell, one of our listeners can sum it up best with a text that says, a friend will help you move. A good friend will help you move a body.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Absolutely. I totally concur.
Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, an honor to meet you. Pleasure to meet you. Continued success in the future. We appreciate
you
being here.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Wendy, for having me on this morning. Have
Absolutely.
A great day.
You
All right.
as well.
A quick break, and then we'll find out what's coming up in the news. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn is on vacation. And why do we just wait for Eric to go on vacation for us to have Mary Schmeek in?
That is a good question. And I know, Mary, you keep telling Eric he needs to take
I'm
more time off.
I'm trying not to be bitter about it.
No, there's no reason to be bitter. Come on. Mary, you've written a couple of articles about this family on the South Side. Large family, 14 kids. And
Catholic, no doubt.
Very, yeah.
Irish Catholic in the days when everyone on the South Side was Irish Catholic identified by parish.
Right.
The gist of the article, it has a lot to do with several familial things, but mostly about what it's like to take care of parents as they get into their twilight years. Not an easy time.
Right. I mean, the story that I wrote was about how they, as a set of 14 children, so it's the Coleman family, and I hope they don't mind me talking about this on the air, but I've written about them, so I trust they don't. And it's a great story. So Marge Coleman was in her 90s, and for the past couple years, all 14 of her children have figured out a way to make sure that she is taken care of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in her own home. They had an online calendar, and everybody, and the math works really well, 14 kids, 7 days in a week, right?
Oh, that is.
So you get, 12-hour shifts, and everybody, put their time in the online calendar. They texted each other twice a day, so whoever was on duty sent a text to everybody else. They would convene sometimes in person if there was something in particular to talk about, and in that way they just made sure that their mother got her wish of living out her life
at
in the
home
that she had raised them.
My eyes are watering because you think about this, and my parents are both gone, yours are as well, your mom has passed away, and it's like you think of this, your parents are going to get older, and a lot of people just finish raising their kids and taking care of their kids, and then they're going to have to go take care of their parents again, too. And it just makes me so proud and sad that all 14 of these kids work together. There's usually a kid or two that is not going to help out.
Right, for various reasons, because
they're far away,
or they're estranged from the family. There's all sorts of reasons. Or because they just assume that, there are a couple who will pick up the slack.
Yeah.
Really what was so inspiring about this family was that every single one of the children participated, that they're all alive, they're all healthy, and they all live nearby. So
that's not easy. That's the part that's really
hard.
Not easy.
That's hard. But the fact that, still they had it within themselves to organize this way. But, they were very quick to say, look, we don't want to set ourselves up as being special here. We're actually just lucky. We have a very large workforce. There are people who are doing the same thing we're doing, but with far fewer people.
Or an only child.
Right. Far fewer resources.
Not to sound cold, but is there an option at some point where they could hire, or would they even want to hire somebody to come in and take care of their mom, or is that just not even a possibility?
Well, she actually passed away last week.
She did. Yeah.
Yeah. I went out to meet her, and really just a wonderful woman. I was so moved to meet her. I mean, I walked in and I immediately just thought, oh my gosh, she reminds me so much of my own mother.
Hmm. She was born. How come?
You know, maybe it's that mother, elderly mother of a large clan who still has her sense of humor. I don't know. But I really just, you know, I felt a great affection and affiliation immediately. And she was just, you know, for all of her physical struggles, she had great presence of mind. She was witty still. She'd been a nurse before she had her kids. And I asked her if that helped with raising her kids. And she said, yeah, it taught you not to panic.
That's great advice, because every other mom does panic.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty beautiful. And a lot of times people don't want a stranger coming into their home either. I mean, you mentioned a caretaker. A lot of times they don't feel comfortable with a stranger coming in.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's the only option.
Yeah, I know.
You know, right. Because there just aren't kids who will do it. You know, people have jobs. People's lives are very complicated.
It's so sad thinking about that as we grow older, you know?
It does make you think, who's going to take care of you?
No one will take care of me. I just hope I get a nice little home.
They're already looking,
or
by the way.
Or a senior center or whatever it's called. Good, they better save their money.
Your husband already told me he's got a place picked out. Go back for a second about that feeling you got about how this lady reminded you of your own mother. There's a weird, the word eerie makes it sound like it's a negative, so I don't want to use the word eerie, but I've had that happen once or twice where I'm with somebody that has a lot of the same kind of features and elements that my mom had, mm-hmm. and you feel so good because it's like, wow, she's back kind of in a weird way, but you know it's not real, but that's a strange feeling, isn't it?
You know, I do think there's a connection in some way among all old people. They're kind of like all babies in a certain way, have a certain similarity and connection.
Yeah.
I feel like as people get older, there is some commonality that they share. And, you know, when I see older women walking around with a walker, I immediately think, oh, mama. Or I'll see a middle-aged daughter walking her mom who's kind of stooped, and tears will spring to my eyes, and I will think, oh, my God, I remember doing that with my mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a commonality of experience, of visuals sometimes.
Right, right.
And what's your experience?
You know who gave me that? This will sound so strange, but a couple of years after my mom died, I was working in another station, and Shirley Jones was my guest. I had Shirley Jones in, and just the way she carried herself and the way she stood and the way she talked. And it's funny because I never saw that in her in all the years I saw her in movies or on television. I never saw any similarity between her and my mom. But I even said to her at the end, I go, please don't take this the wrong way. I've never been in a room with anybody that reminds me as much of my mom as you do right now. And it's a very strange feeling for me. She goes, no, I thank you for telling me that. But she really did.
But doesn't it make you wonder if you see that similarity because you are yearning
maybe.
To get
her back.
Her back.
Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah. But nobody before or since. Mm-hmm. And it was like, as I'm talking to her, I almost knew the way she was going to answer was like my mom, and the way she held herself and laughed and stuff. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm. The truth is, as human beings, we are not as distinct as we like to think.
No, maybe not.
We all want to think, I am unique. No one ever spoke the way I do,
right.
Stood the way I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone has just texted, my two sisters and I have just started the same process. The three of us just spent a week and a half in the hospital with my mom, each of us taking different shifts. It would be really helpful to have more. One sister lives down in Peoria, but you make it work for your parent. And you do owe it to them.
Yeah. I mean, families are different. So, I always worry a little bit that, you know, there's somebody out there thinking, my mother was a terrible mother to me, or my father was a terrible father, and I don't owe it to them. And they may be right, you know? But
If, there's a reason perhaps they were a terrible parent.
Well, right, exactly.
I don't know that they meant they set out to be a terrible
parent.
Right,
right. All I'm saying is that, you know, I'm reluctant to speak ill of people who choose not.
Absolutely. Your mileage may vary on everything.
Right.
Some people are just not built for that sort of care. You know what I mean? And it you say, but yeah, but you have to be. But some people just aren't.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, there's all these different levels of it. There's just the time commitment, you know, okay, I will go and I will be there for whatever time, a day, a week, yeah. a month, 6 months. But especially as a parent gets really old and disabled, mm-hmm. you begin to deal with your parent's body in these very intimate ways.
Yeah.
And not everybody is equipped for that. I mean, I really had to learn some stuff about myself and push my boundaries when I realized the just physical aspects of my mother.
And it's embarrassing for them, too.
Well, exactly.
Because it's like my kid shouldn't be doing
Wendy.
This.
So, you know, you have to figure out a way to do it, not only that doesn't embarrass you, but that doesn't embarrass your parents.
Exactly. Because they don't really want the help, but they need it.
Right. And, you know, and that's the times where, you know,
that's when jokes are good.
That well, yeah, but you know, but the caretaker who's not related,
right?
You know, that can be easier.
Yeah, I bet
for some people,
absolutely.
Well, no one will take care of me, and someone has an idea. So, if anybody needs a place to go as we get into our twilight years, somebody said that we can come with this listener and her sister. They're going to a nursing home in Hawaii. It's called Oceanside Senior Assisted Living, and it's on the north shore of Oahu.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So I'm going to start saving my money
up,
now.
Right.
That sounds great. More with Mary Schmeek, Tribune columnist next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We seem to have tapped into something that a lot of people can relate to, taking care of elderly parents. We were talking about, you know, we owe it to our parents. And then Mary Schmeek, who's with us, Tribune columnist, said, well, some people may not feel they owe it to their parents. Someone texted something that made a lot of sense. When it comes to parents, what has to continually remind ourselves, they raised us the best way they knew how.
Sure.
Maybe that will clarify why some children don't show up because they never got that message. I mean, really, parents try their best, and they're going to make mistakes, but they really try to do the best that they can. Most of them. There are a select few who are just bad people.
Right. I just want to share something very useful that a friend of mine said to me when I was going through this with my own mother, because she was in Oregon at the time, and I was traveling out there a lot, spending a lot of time. I was writing columns from Oregon. You know, it was really complicated. And yet I did it because I love my mother so dearly, because I just felt I had no option, not because she demanded it, but because it's what I wanted to do. And yet this tug of time was just, you know, tugging me in every direction. And I mentioned to a friend who had gone through this with his father, and he said something that was so helpful to me. He said, "You will never regret a minute that you spent with her. But don't let yourself regret the minutes that you didn't."
Wow.
And that was just very useful. I felt like it liberated me that if I couldn't be there every day, every minute, it was okay. But also, I would never regret a minute I spent with her. And I absolutely didn't.
That's perfect.
That's fantastic. I wonder if in the animal kingdom, if other animals, because when you think about that arc of life, or I guess circle of life, where your parents take care of you when you're little, and then whatever years later, you're taking care of them, I wonder if that goes on with other animals, or if that's strictly a human
thing.
That
is a good question. You must have a listener who's smart that way out there to call in and tell you.
Tell
that.
Me. If Dr. Lester Fisher from Ark in the Park is listening, call and tell me if other animals do that.
And see, people accuse you of not being an animal lover, and you never said that. You just don't like having them as pets.
Right.
Look
That's
at
right.
that.
That's right.
Interesting.
Because it is, I mean, when you stop and think about it, it is so, I mean, I guess it shows that there's balance in the universe. But those same people that figured you out and helped you mature and fend for yourself when you were a baby, you kind of have to reciprocate. That's such a strange concept, but it makes sense.
But, you know, the way we live now in modern society, where families live so far apart, so often, where people have few or no children.
Yeah.
That whole ecosystem has been disrupted by the way that we live now. And I'm not saying the way that we live now is bad. There are a lot of things about it that are actually better. But in terms of that cycle of caretaking, it has gotten a lot more complicated.
You don't have kids.
I don't
so
have
do
kids.
You think about that at some point?
Sure.
You do, don't you?
You know, I didn't used to. But I think after my mother died, I looked around and I went, well, I did that for her. Was that a karmic investment?
Right.
Those nieces and nephews who pretend they love me so much, I just don't think they're going to be there in that way.
Interesting. You
know? It's weird. I mean, even having kids, you wonder what's... you can't think about what tomorrow may bring. You really can't because, you know, you can walk outside and get hit by a bus and then no one's going to have to worry about that.
Right.
You just don't know. Live each day like it's your last. Is that what they tell us? Also, a sweet little thing that I saw, Bill saw on Facebook, and you need to see. It's a young guy with his father who is suffering from Alzheimer's, and they weren't really able to communicate about many things. He would get frustrated and forget his thoughts. And then all of a sudden, they started singing the song, Tell Me Cuando, Cuando, Cuando. And they both sang it together in unison, knew every word. His dad was really getting into it. And it's just a really beautiful moment how maybe they do forget a lot of things, but there are certain things that you can share together. It's really, really touching to look at that. So be on the lookout for that.
Well, you know, and that brings up another question. Caretaking of an elderly parent who has dementia or Alzheimer's who doesn't know who you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a couple of friends in that position, and I've heard from some readers in that position. And that, you know, at least my mother, up until almost her dying day, we talked. And I could still make her laugh a little bit. So there was still that obvious familiar connection.
And a relationship still continuing.
Right, right. And, you know, I've heard from people whose parents have Alzheimer's who still feel the relationship, but you're not getting the feedback on it in the same way. And so that really does summon a whole something else from people.
I know you could say this about any disease, but Alzheimer's is just so cruel on so many different fronts.
For the people who are taking care of the person who has it, it's the whole Glenn Campbell thing, frustrating at the beginning, but then he's like, it's not hard on me because I don't know what I'm forgetting anymore.
Right. Right. It's,
and, you know, Bill, I was telling you this. I probably am going to embarrass my son. He's got one more year of high school. He found his baby book, and he got really sad inside. Yeah. And he said, you know, I'm looking at this baby book, and now I'm getting ready to go to college next year, and it makes me sad. And I said, it's so much easier to be a kid. It's great to be an adult, and it's very rewarding, but mistakes you make have bigger consequences than when you're a little kid. And it's great to grow up, but it's kind of depressing. I'm sorry. It really is. You know, now Bill pointed it out to me on the eve of or a week before your 50th birthday. You were saying, you know, it's just half of our life is gone.
Well, they say it's middle age. They go 50 and 55. That's middle age. But then do the math. For a lot of us, it's not.
Well, you know, I looked up the definition of middle age not long ago when I was writing something. And technically, middle age ends at 64.
So which of us is going to live to 128? It's not going to be me.
I hope I make it to 55.
I know. Mary, thanks.
Thank you.
Work as always. That's Mary Schmeek. Read her in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks. Can I ask a favor of you, Kim? Did you just do the story? Earlier this morning, we told you about a song that was played at Wrigley Field last night. From Prodigy. I won't use the title, of course, because I'm in mixed company.
I said
but
it.
You're in the newsroom, so you have to. They played a song that has some negative connotation domestically after Aroldis Chapman pitched.
What's the name of the song, Kim? I can't remember it.
Smack
That Bitch Up.
Yeah,
okay.
By Prodigy. And now,
that was the theme to my wedding.
And now
They have
released the man responsible for this.
They
fired him today.
Yes, they fired the DJ, yes.
Wow.
All right. I have to tell you, when this was brought up on Steve Cochran's show earlier this morning, I said, so the person who's responsible, will they be fired or promoted?
Right.
Because
it's really, it's inventive, but in a, such a negative way, isn't it?
A negative way, also negative.
It really is. I mean, you give them some credit for thinking out of the box a little bit, but,
yeah, but
it's such a sensitive issue.
You know
you
what?
You can't do that.
It's not an appropriate song for a baseball game. End of discussion.
Right. It's a family entertainment.
Right. He could have been more creative, and maybe listeners can help, a better song that would have been more suited to a baseball park, but would still get the message across.
Get the message across. I guess so.
The theme from Rocky?
Oh, even that. I mean,
but that's
actually
family friendly.
That, but that would have been a bigger red flag, because anybody who knows Aroldis Chapman's history, as soon as you hear the Rocky theme, it's very recognizable by so many people. You would quickly equate the two. But with this, it's such an obscure song, especially in a Wrigley Field setting. Nobody would probably they probably thought no one will recognize it, but they were
wrong. Were there words?
Yeah, but I don't know that they played the words. I just think they
well,
only
it's still
played
just the connotation of it.
Right.
Anybody recognizing it goes,
yeah,
you know, you could put two and two together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should have gone Rocky. You wouldn't be fired.
You might be right. Did the person who got fired, the DJ who got fired, Kim, has there been a comment from him as of yet?
No, and
not
they're
yet?
Not releasing his name.
Nothing?
Well, sure, because he's going to get business.
He'll get
I'd like to book him for my reunion.
Right. Right.
Because that shows creativity.
Yeah, he's so creative, but then don't you have to balance the creative with the politically correct at that point, don't you?
You would think so.
Yeah.
I think it's just that it was
I mean,
the
I was there last night. It went way over my head. Well, I would have never known that that was the name of the song or that was the song being played, but I'm sure that there are people who are more into music than me that probably put it together right away. I had no clue.
I guess. But I would say that probably, wouldn't you think 95% of the people who heard it, maybe more, it just went right through them?
Right.
They didn't even think about it? Sure.
The only thing that we kept saying was, wait a minute, it wasn't Lackey pitching. Who was pitching last night? Was it Lackey? Yes.
I only saw the last few innings of the game. So
okay, so at the beginning, Lackey, I believe, was the starter, and his walk-up song is "I've Got Friends in Low Places" by Garth Brooks.
Oh.
And we did actually pay attention to that because he was up several times, and so we're like, "Oh, he must love Garth Brooks," and we were talking about that. But the other song, like the Chapman thing, went way over my head
because it wasn't popular, and it's a bad thing. Like it had he done "Beat It" by Michael Jackson,
right?
I guess.
That wouldn't have been great either.
That's family friendly.
Right.
Yeah, but it still has the same connotation.
He was waving a gun around, so something like Janie's Got a Gun or something like
that.
See?
Now you're thinking.
But even that, the Cubs are going to be so sensitive because as they were mentioning the fact that they were going to make a play for him, trade for him, there were a lot of fans, myself included, that went, maybe not the best guy to have in the clubhouse, you know? So the Cubs are super sensitive to this, and they should be.
Well, this DJ had to have known he was
he knew,
done.
Of course.
So go out with a bang.
I guess so. I guess. All right. He's no longer working for the Cubs. I have to ask you this. Was this weekend a sad weekend at your house because a Star Wars luminary died over the weekend?
Oh, yeah.
You
know
this?
I do know this. It is a sad moment. I found the news out. When did he die? Was it Friday?
It must have been Friday.
Because Saturday I called my husband and I said, "Are you sitting down?" And oddly enough, he was in the bathroom, so he was.
Oh. Well, got a 50-50 shot, I guess.
And I said, there's some sad news. Kenny Baker has passed away. He goes, "Yeah, I know. I already know."
R2D, for people who don't know, that's the man inside the R2D2
suit. Not suit, machine.
Costume?
Outfit, what would you usually say.
The R2D2 outfit.
He was aware of it, and you know, it's
did
funny.
Did it make him sad? I bet he was sad.
He was sad.
Sure, because that's one of the names you always think about from the original Star Wars, and now he's no longer with us.
And he had interviewed him in the past,
yeah.
Kenny Baker, and then he went on to say how Anthony Daniels, who played C-3PO, never liked Kenny Baker.
They didn't get along.
At all.
C-3PO and R2-D2 do not get along. Isn't that like, you go, wait, that can't be right, but it's right. They don't like each other.
Just
they didn't like
Eric and Kathy.
Well, similar, I guess. Yeah. And there's a guy in their outfits too, isn't there? A little small guy just operating all the buttons inside.
Right.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. Yep. But it's funny whenever there's some Star Wars news where I figured he knew, and there are several times you will say something to me like, is Jim aware of this?
Yeah.
And I'll text him and he'll go, thank Bill, but of course I do.
Sure.
So then as I called to tell him that Kenny Baker, R2-D2, had passed away, I thought I should have done it more tactfully, because what if he didn't know?
You don't want to be too cold.
I'm so sorry about R2.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I should have said, I know that this meant a lot to you, but
right.
No, but he was aware of it.
He
yes,
knew already.
He knew. It wasn't really that sad. He was older. He was 80.
I think he was, yeah, right around 80, I think.
I want to say 86, but he could have been older, and he was a little person,
yeah.
And a lot of times people don't live that long.
Right. That's true.
You know what I mean?
No, he lived a very long life. It's really strange. There were 3 Star Wars stories over the week. And each one of them, I wanted to say, is Jimmy aware of this? But then inside, I'm like, well, yeah, he runs a Star Wars podcast. If anyone knows this, it's probably him.
And if he doesn't, he shouldn't be doing Rebel Force Radio.
Right. That's very true.
81.
He was 81 years old, Kenny Baker. Yeah. R2-D2. They called him, I saw an article where they said he was the heart of Star Wars. Is that accurate?
He's about the size of a heart.
Of a heart, yeah.
He was little.
All right.
He was ill for years with a lung condition, according to his niece,
who was
taller
sad.
Than he was.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break.
3'8".
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. He did not expect to live past his teenage years because he was a little person. So I say 81 is beating the odds quite a bit.
He's 3'8". I didn't, for some reason, I would have guessed way taller, but I guess to be that size and fit in there. Well, now Kevin Hart has another job, doesn't he?
Is this why you sucked me into it so you could make fun of Kevin Hart?
No, my Kevin Hart joke. Can I tell you what my Kevin Hart joke was? Because he got married over the weekend.
To a beautiful woman who's taller than he is.
And I was thinking, this is great. He could save money and just stand on his own wedding cake. He doesn't have to buy a wedding cake decoration.
You have so much hate. You sucked me into the Star Wars angle of it so you could
No, there's two other big Star Wars stories that I didn't even tell you about.
All right.
Well, let's take a break. I'll tell you what they are. But I bet Jimmy already knows these.
I'm sorry. I want to offer my condolences to you for Five-ish Finkel. He died too.
That was sad. From Picket Fences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of you every time because a lot of times poor Five-ish Finkel was the punchline of many jokes that we have done over the years just because it's a great name.
It is a fantastic name.
Five-ish.
I know. All right. A quick break and then more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Is this your doorbell when people come to your house? Is this what plays on the doorbell?
No, believe it or not, Bill, other than the Star Wars room, I will not allow much Star Wars stuff going on.
Throughout the rest of the house, no?
Boxer shorts, maybe.
You wear those?
I don't.
Oh, Jimmy does?
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, there will be a big Star Wars story, and I say to myself, I should really tell you, and then you could pass that word along to your husband, Jimmy, and then I think to myself, he already knows this. Whatever it is that I know, he probably knew a few days ago. But there were 3 big Star Wars stories in the last week. One of them is that R2-D2, as we mentioned, Kenny Baker, had died at the age of 81. Another one is that the guy who was originally Darth Vader, that would be, do you know his name?
Originally, like, not the voice
not
of,
the voice,
but David
James
Prowse?
Earl Jones. David Prowse was the man inside the Darth Vader outfit.
Why do you keep saying outfit?
I don't know. It's just fun.
It's cute.
Did you know he's mad at everybody related to Star Wars? He's mad at them because I think everybody knows this by now, but here's a quick spoiler alert. If you don't want to hear this, turn away for 10 seconds. Darth Vader is in the new Rogue One movie that's coming out in December.
Because the trailer showed him in it,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, but I'm afraid people maybe they didn't see the trailer. But yeah, you see him for a second in the trailer. He still has asthma. He's still looking at a big space, like a star
it's
screen.
Not asthma.
I think he's got asthma. So he's in that.
Yeah, it's a CPAP. That's what he's using.
He's got a big CPAP machine. That's the name of his droid. CPAP. So David Prowse, the original Darth Vader, is furious because he wants to keep playing Darth Vader.
And why wouldn't you?
Right. But they're like, we got a different guy. We have a different guy to play Darth Vader now.
Yeah, but it's not. It's James Earl Jones's voice. Spoiler alert.
Right.
So why does it matter? They could put anybody in that outfit.
See, I hate to be. I mean,
it's true.
It's true. Almost anybody could play. I mean.
And didn't we interview David Prowse? He's this like really great, wonderfully trained actor, isn't he? Why does he have to just be? I mean, why would he want that?
They hired him because he was a big guy. He was a tall guy. Yeah. So they needed a guy who kind of fit the outfit, you know? So they got David Prowse. But
couldn't have been Kevin Hart.
That sounds like the Johnny Bravo episode of the Brady Bunch. Was it the Brady Bunch?
Yeah. Yes. He fits the suit. That's why he's Johnny Bravo. So, but David Prowse is furious because he says, and he's older now and he's had all kinds of health
issues.
He's
81. He's an English bodybuilder and weightlifter.
Right.
And actor.
Right.
And crotchety.
And he's a little crotchety. But he had been in, I think he was in like a bunch of Hammer movies, you know, the not MC Hammer, the horror movies of the 60s.
He was?
Yeah, I think he, I'm trying to remember which movie I saw him in. I want to say some version of Frankenstein or something, I think. Because he was a very big, imposing guy. But now he's furious because he says, hey, I'm Darth Vader. You can't get other guys to play Darth Vader. And then there was some Star Wars festival that he was uninvited to because he's been very vocal about the fact that they're not letting him play Darth Vader anymore.
Well, they should uninvite him.
But that's weird to not have the guy who played Darth Vader.
But it's not really playing him. It's not like it was even his voice. If it was his voice, I could see that.
I know. But can I end on one that's a happier Star Wars story? And I know your husband already knows this, but I found this entertaining. In the new Han Solo movie, they're making a movie about Han Solo when he was young, right? So they needed a guy to play Lando Calrissian.
Kevin Hart?
It will not be Kevin Hart.
Wouldn't that be a kick in your butt?
Yeah.
And Lando was smooth as silk. Billy Dee Williams.
You can't get better than Billy Dee Williams.
I'm telling you. Smooth over everything. Did the Colt 45 commercials forever. Love him.
They cut the scenes out in Empire Strikes Back where Lando has a Colt 45, but there's a couple scenes where he's just sitting back and drinking a Colt 45. But they think they know who's going to play it, and I hope you know who this guy is. Donald Glover, he was in Community. He's a comedian. He's an actor. He's a rapper. He's a really good I'm not a rap fan, but he's
What's
actually Childish Gambino when he's a rapper.
Yeah, very clever.
Very clever.
What's his real name?
Donald Glover.
I think I know.
No relation to Danny Glover.
Seriously?
No relation. Yeah. Yeah. I think when you see him, you might know him. Does he look familiar to you? But that's a good choice to play young Lando Calrissian.
He kind of looks like him, and he looks really cool.
And he is. He's very cool. I like this. I think this is a good casting choice. I like this. I think this is a good move for everybody.
No, they are not related.
Danny Glover and Donald Glover.
Right. Kevin in my ear was like, I think they are.
I had heard they were like, you know, his uncle or something like that. I don't think so, though.
Mm-mm.
No relation.
No relation. But it's a good, that's a good casting move. I like that a lot. It's really hard to get a guy who could be half as cool as Billy Dee Williams. But this guy is, so this is a good move.
All right, well, that looks good. And, yeah, I don't know about David Prowse, but really it just doesn't seem fair or right. Why is he so upset? How much do you get paid for just standing in an outfit?
It's not even standing. There's scenes where Darth Vader is a little more physical, you know.
Oh.
And he's
so he'd
really
finally get to do something big?
Yeah, and he's had a hard time. I mean, he's 81. He's not as limber as he once was.
Is that why they didn't have him?
Yeah.
Get J.J. Abrams on the phone.
You want to talk some sense into him?
I was talking to Jimmy Mack about this, and I wondered what your thoughts were on this, because he is so into Star Wars, but he likes the Trek and went and saw the Star Trek movie. And doesn't J.J. do both?
He does.
There's going to be a mashup, I bet you, someday. I'll bet you they will.
I don't think they could do
Who
that.
Who said Disney and Star Wars would mash up someday?
Yeah, but they're not combining with Disney and Star Wars. They're not putting the elements in the same movie. It's the same parent company.
There has been all the figures with, you know.
Yeah, but not a physical movie. I mean,
they do
figures.
It just seems like it might happen, like all of a sudden, you know, maybe not a full-blown movie, but maybe in a Star Trek movie they'll show, you know, like R2 and C-3PO flying by
on
something.
They've done that with Raiders of the Lost Ark. There have been Star Wars and E.T., made an appearance in one of the Star Wars movies too. You know that,
right? Because the Spielberg connection.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's the Battle of the Stars.
I wonder. All right, let's take a quick break. News is next, and then we have a big show. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. You can reach us during the show at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. I will warn you right now, this story we're about to tell you is, it's not just tragic, it's beyond tragic. It's a little boy, Danny Fitzpatrick is his name. If you were anywhere near your computer this weekend, you probably saw the story. He's a 13-year-old boy, lived in Staten Island, New York. He took his own life over the weekend. He hanged himself. Now the question is, who exactly is to blame for this young boy's suicide? Is it the school? Is it the principal of the school? Is it the students of the school? I'll tell you the story. It says a 13-year-old boy, this is out of CBS's website, a 13-year-old Staten Island boy took his own life after what he described as merciless bullying by his classmates at a private Catholic school, this according to CBS in New York. Danny Fitzpatrick hung himself in his attic last week. The teen left behind a handwritten note describing the alleged abuse by five boys at the Holy Angels Catholic School located in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. Here's what Danny wrote in his note. They did it constantly, adding that he told his teachers, but that his teachers did nothing. I gave up the teachers and they didn't do anything, in all caps, Danny wrote. Daniel Fitzpatrick, Danny's father, said in an emotional Facebook video that his son was a kind, gentle little soul and didn't have a mean bone in his body. No child should have to go through what my son went through, Fitzpatrick said. Brooklyn Archdiocese spokeswoman Carolyn Erstad said that they take issue with the bullying very seriously. Daniel's complaints about bullying did not fall upon deaf ears, Erstad said. The principal believes she did everything in her power to help Daniel and to deal with any students accused of bullying. However, that's not enough for Fitzpatrick, again, the boy's father, who had a message for the parents of the other boys. You get to hold your children every night and day for the rest of your lives and their natural lives, and I don't get to do that anymore, he said.
I don't know whose fault it is. It's a tragedy beyond words. I can't even imagine it. How much is the responsibility? He told the teachers. I mean, what do the teachers do rather than have him come and eat lunch in the principal's office so no one can bully him?
To be separate from those kids.
But, I mean, that will make kids bully you more, probably.
Yeah, I guess so.
Why didn't his parents take him out of that school?
I wonder the same thing. If it's as bad as the story seems to describe it as being, although it's one of those cases where if he's not the problem, why should you have to interrupt to take the kid out? Why don't you try to make a case with the principal and say, look, my kid's just in there trying to learn.
And
if anyone's going to leave the school, shouldn't it be those kids?
Yeah, but sometimes you have to take the initiative and remove yourself from the problematic situation.
Yeah, especially, I mean, there was no way to know that it would end this tragically, but you're right. I mean, I'm sure that if his parents knew that it was going to have this horrible, horrible ending, then you take the kid out of school, right?
But, you know, bullying is such a tough thing. I mean, think back to when we were in the schoolyard and there were people that got bullied every day. It's nothing new.
Every day.
I think kids take it more severely because with social media, and I am going to whip the social media out, people can make fun of you online, on your Facebook page, on the Instagram. So what would just be hurtful words exchanged on the playground now happen for everyone to see.
Right.
And there's a lot of pressure for the kids that are getting bullied. I get that.
Yeah. I think it's also, and this is going to sound like an old man of me, but we all used to get knocked around a little bit when we were younger.
Yeah, that's what I said. And we now all kind of dealt with it.
I know, but now I think everyone is so much more coddled and everything is, man, it sounds old, but, you know, the kids don't deal with defeat
There's
nearly
no time
as much.
To develop a thicker skin.
A thicker skin, right, yeah. Because anytime, you know, everyone else, you're great, ooh, I love you, you look great, you know, so you're not taking your lumps every day like we used to.
Right.
Yeah, but again, you guys, we didn't have social media. Imagine, you know, somebody made fun of you, Steve, for being too tall or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to have it happen on the playground, but another thing for you to send this out so the whole school sees it. It's like you're totally being targeted more.
No, I agree. I don't disagree with that at all.
And, you know, listen, different kids take unkind words differently. And
some are far more sensitive than others. No question about it.
So, I mean, obviously, if this kid is getting bullied by five guys and he's been talking to the teacher, I'm sorry, where are the parents coming in? You know, did he say something to his mom and dad? These guys keep bugging me.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I can become quite the bulldog, and I am at that school until something's solved here. Like, we've got reports from my son of these five kids. What are you going to do about it?
There's a documentary called Bully that's 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old. And first of all, when you watch it, you'll recognize everybody in it, even though they're people you've never met. If you ever went to school, you'll go, oh, I knew that kid. I totally knew that kid. So in that movie, they go out of their way to show you that so often the kid who is the bullied kid, when doing exactly what you just said, I just want to fix this. I just don't want to be bullied. The teachers make it worse sometimes because that kid becomes the problem child, you know? And it seems impossible. You go, if you're an educator, how do you not recognize who's starting it and who's taking the brunt of it? But they showed in one instance in particular, this kid that I don't know how this kid survived school. I can't imagine from the time he got on the bus every day till the time he went home, he was ripped to shreds by every kid in that school. And you just say, how does that kid keep going back for more? But when he would approach the teachers and say, here's what just happened to me, that kid would get in trouble.
Teachers need a way of doing things. And elementary school teachers have been doing it a long time. I have a personal story. A teacher that my older son had who I loved, and then my younger son had him, and my son would come home and say, yeah, so-and-so's being mean to me, and we're like, suck it up.
Yeah.
Come on, really? Right. I know this teacher. She's great. Well, the principal's bugging me, too, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. My husband went in to meet with the principal for something and witnessed the principal, who has since been fired, being very rude to my son.
Yeah.
And then I witnessed the teacher, whom I loved and defended, being very unfair and kind of bullying my son. I took my kid out of that school for last couple months of school.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden the administration, I mean, kids are going to be kids. And I feel horrible that I never believed my son. And if I wouldn't have witnessed it with my own eyes, I wouldn't have believed it.
Right.
I really wouldn't have.
Right.
So to be a parent and there's a problem going on at school, please feel free to go to the school and don't be rude, but find out some information. And that's what I don't know if these parents did do that. But you have to go to the school and say, listen, this is what my son's telling me. I know sometimes he might exaggerate things,
sure,
but I need to look into this. Can we find out what's going on?
Yeah.
There's also all these schools that are ranting and raving about their no bully policy. My older son got bullied a little bit at a junior high, and we went in with him to the principal, and they said, we have ways of watching things in the cafeteria where we're not going to single you out. Because if they single you out by, like, we're watching this kid, then kids are going to bully you on the school ground.
Sure. Yeah,
it's
that's
a really terrible situation, and I'm so sorry. How old is this kid? 13 years old, he hangs himself.
He was 13 years old.
Good God.
I'm not going to read you the whole letter. The whole letter is available online. It's fairly easy to find. It's Danny Fitzpatrick's letter. And your heart just aches for this kid because all you can feel is the torment of this kid knowing that at least 5 days a week, at least Monday through Friday, from the time he walks into school till he leaves, he's just going to get ripped to shreds by these five kids. And then I know this is a weird angle to take on this, but I'm thinking about those five kids right now where you go, okay, I was ripping this kid, but I sure didn't think he would hang himself. And now that's on them for the rest of their lives. And as cruel as this sounds, maybe that's a good thing because maybe that says to them, I really have to think about my actions before I follow through.
But
you're 13 and you know you contributed to another 13-year-old kid's death.
I don't think they ever thought that in a million years.
I don't think so either.
You know, it was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you know, your typical kid after, I don't know, that's when I feel the parents go into the school. And don't go in with two guns blazing. Go in and say, I'm hearing this at home, and I want to look into this a little more.
Yeah.
And be frank and say, you know, maybe my kid's exaggerating, but there's a problem here, and it needs to be solved. And then you have to think whether or not you take your kid out of that school.
Absolutely.
Especially at such a young age, at 13, you know, elementary school, junior high, you have to really advocate for your kids because they don't know how to do it yet.
Right. I know. All right. We have a bunch of calls. We have a bunch of texts. Stay on the line. We'll get to your calls and texts in just a moment. I promise. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, as I said, this is an awful, awful story. This young kid, 13 years old, Danny Fitzpatrick was his name. He hung himself last week after years of being bullied in a private school, a Catholic school in Staten Island, New York. It's Holy Angels Catholic Academy in Bay Ridge, located in Brooklyn, New York. They're trying to determine exactly who's to blame in this. The kid, Danny, left a quite extensive note as to why he was going to kill himself. He blamed the school. He blamed the principal. He most notably blamed the five kids who continuously bullied him. But we're trying to figure out, is that anyone's fault in a case like this? I guess when you look at it from a distance, it's everybody's fault to some extent.
And it's easier, you know, when something tragic happens, you want to blame somebody because you want to know why it happened.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Kevin. Kevin, your son was bullied at school. What did you have to do to make it stop?
Hey, Bill and Wendy. What we had to do to make it stop was we asked for a meeting. So we had a meeting with the principal, the vice principal, the dean, and then some of the teaching coordinators. So we sat there. What I want to tell you and all your listeners is, so they never will allow you to identify who it is or who else that they're talking to in the situation, whether they're talking to anybody, whether there will be down the road any type of consequences. Unfortunately, it really all seems like everybody's guilty, because if they don't see it, this happened in the gym locker room. One of my questions was there anybody monitoring that? No, there wasn't. All the kids are just in there, and when they come out to the gymnasium, then they see the teacher. I said, well, that's an issue. And I listened to all of this stuff, and I kept my mouth shut. And I like to speak, but I kept my mouth shut. When it was all said and done, I was so emotional and so mad.
Sure.
I just said, what one of your charges when we send our kids to school is that you will do everything that you can to protect those children.
Yeah.
Yes? And we'll do that. But the idea was, I mean, everybody was guilty until proven innocent. So my son was suspended, even though he was the victim of it. I don't know if the other kids were suspended or not. And it's just left that way. And it's unfortunate. It's just like a reverse.
That is no solution to the problem. Why didn't they put someone in the locker room to, you know,
keep an eye on things? I absolutely agree. Even if it's the volunteer.
Right.
I said, how can this be happening? And I said, what are we going to do to prevent this? And they really didn't ever address it.
And so how did it end up, Kevin?
Well, he was suspended, and, you know, he was suspended for a week. And then, you know, he was allowed to go back, and it was never really addressed again. We did follow up of, well, how did it go down? Josh was suspended.
How was your son suspended because he was bullied? I really don't.
Because they could not. They said it was an altercation in the locker room. They could not.
Oh, okay. And he fought back.
Right.
Was the other kid suspended too?
I don't know.
Was after that, after the suspension, was there any more problems between your son and this other kid?
Actually, there were three kids.
Three kids?
Yeah. There were some issues just verbally.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You know, they're not going to identify them, but your son is giving you their name. So, I mean, honestly, I could be a real squeaky wheel when it comes to protecting your kids, and parents, you should be too. I'm not saying cause trouble for the school, but if you have names, you go there and say, here's what my son is telling me. You know what? He may be elaborating, but this is what I want looked into.
Hear, hear. I completely agree.
Kevin, thank you so much for calling.
And my guess is there's no reason you can't bring, if it's that serious, you can bring criminal charges, couldn't you? I mean, you could go, you don't have to let the school take care of it. You could say, hey, I've got an attorney, and if, you know, if things aren't done properly, I won't be afraid to use the attorney. You can do that, I would imagine.
I would imagine, but see, you want, I mean, here's the thing, is you don't want your kid blackballed at this school.
No, I know.
So you want to go in and start a conversation and say, listen, I have some concerns.
Yeah.
Again, my son may be embellishing, but you know what? I need to get to the bottom of this and see if they do anything. And if they're not giving you any kind of resolution, then by all means, get an attorney. Mary, what do you think?
Hi. My son, years ago, who was smaller than other kids and thin, and this big kid just beat him up every day after school. He had strangled him. He had bruises on his neck, the shape of the kid's hands, and banged his head on railroad tracks. We went to the principal, who was a nun. It was a Catholic school. And she said, we don't get involved in children's disagreements. And we called the police, and I got this wonderful female cop who said, send him to school every day with a quarter, because it was a while ago, and tell him to go right to the payphone in the school and tell the principal that you're doing that. And we told her, and she said, well, that's ridiculous. And she called the police and got a different cop, and he said, we wouldn't say that. But he did it. He walked to the phone the next time it happened and called the police. And after that, the principal did get involved because she was embarrassed.
Sure.
And it never happened again. But he almost died. I mean, it was very serious.
It was that bad.
Yeah.
So sorry for that, Mary, and thank you for sharing it. A lot of texts here. I say have the bullied kid learn to fight and have him fight back. The fighting kids get suspended, both of them. Whether you're fighting back for yourself. And I started saying that, you know, you got to defend yourself, kids. Also, I was bullied at lunch and it was horrible. I tried to sit by myself, but everyone just looked at me weird, including the teachers. Then I didn't eat my lunch anymore. Teachers need to do more to stop bullying and to stop treating you like you're special. Elaborating, try to learn our language. You are on the radio. Can't you communicate? I meant embellishing, and I corrected myself, but thank you. They're bullying me, Bill.
I guess.
And appalling to hear a parent taking child out of school for months because of ill treatment. Sad, but seriously, is that the best solution? Holy buckets.
Holy buckets.
If the situation's bad, yeah, you can get the schooling somewhere else. No kid should go through any of this, and if the school's not going to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say take the kid out and find some place to finish that year.
I know this is hard to sum up in a second or two, but in this kid's case in New York, in this Danny Fitzpatrick story, is it the school's fault? Is it the principal's fault? Is it these other five boys' fault? What do you think?
I don't think fault can be put on anyone. It's just a terrible series of events.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I read the story and I just,
it's heartbreaking.
It's awful. And you think back to the kids that you knew that, I mean, I could give you some kids' names in my grade school and high school that were just bullied so horribly. And you just say, how do you rebound from that after, you know, if it happens for years and years and years, are you ever going to be okay again after that? It's just terrible.
It's awful.
All right, we need to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy. You know how Patrick McDonald comes in here a lot.
Sure. Talk about films with us.
Yes.
Yep.
He turned us on to someone that I am looking very forward to meeting, and I'd love to see his one-man play that's going on. This is John Michael. How are you, John?
I'm doing great.
Your play is called Dementia Me.
That's right.
Patrick McDonald was telling me about this. This play focuses on a job that you had for a couple of years. Why don't you explain this? Because it really sounds very intriguing to me.
For 2 years, I was in the activities department for a memory care community in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. And up until that point, I hadn't been able to hold a job longer than like 3 months. Hmm. My previous job was at an adult toy store in the neighborhood in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, all right.
So that was, you know, on my resume, and I come into the job.
Kind of a switch in careers.
I get the interview, and, you know, he's like, my supervisor at the time, or the guy who interviewed me, said that this job really needs someone who smiles and who makes people smile.
Memory care center, please explain that.
Oh, dementia.
Okay.
Alzheimer's. That's the brand word they
memory care center.
Predominantly older folks?
Yes.
Or,
yes, yeah. Sir. Yeah. Some former football players.
Is that right?
Yeah. So about your age.
Wow. Some names you recognized? Was there anybody?
I majored in theater.
Yeah.
So
the football players' names might not.
No,
all right, that's fine.
No, not at all, though.
All right, that's all right. That's fine.
All right, so your job was to make them smile. That's what they told you to do.
That's right. And, you know, I did it. It was a really rewarding job. You do it by doing fun things that aren't bingo, mm-hmm. something that, you know, spices it up. We had dogs. We would walk the dogs. I remember after Halloween, my boss wanted me to throw away all the pumpkins that we decorated before bingo. And I didn't want to do bingo. So I convinced him to let me smash the pumpkins with the residents.
Really?
How did it? With sledgehammers?
With hammers, with hockey sticks, with golf clubs. And it's really easy for us as society to feel sorry for people who are sick or have a challenge.
Yeah.
And that gets in the way.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It coddles them and infantilizes them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you think you're not going to want these people who...
With hammers.
Right.
Yeah, but the joy in their faces.
I can only imagine.
Therapeutic, to some extent.
The pumpkin seeds flying everywhere. I was like, they're... Yeah. Really
well, think
funny.
About being a kid and the first time you smashed a pumpkin. Thank you, Billy Corgan. it was kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it still is fun.
So you have taken all these jobs, this particular job where you're helping these people who mm-hmm. are mentally challenged at this point.
Mentally impaired.
Impaired.
Because
they're losing.
They're not stupid.
Right.
No.
As one of my supervisors used to say, they're not stupid, John Michael. They just forget.
Oh, yeah.
That is true. So at this memory care center, you took your experiences there and turned it into a one-man show. It's called Dementia Me, and it's opening
tonight.
Today?
Are you excited? A little excited? Yeah.
Excited.
You can't tell? Look at him. He's crawling out of his skin.
I had $20 down on yes, you're excited. I was betting that you were excited. Good.
It's the Den Theater, 1333 North Milwaukee. That's like Ashland in Milwaukee, you said?
Exactly.
And there will be balloons, I hear.
Yes. So one of my many responsibilities was to throw birthday parties.
Yeah.
And this show starts out with a birthday party for someone who is 90 years old, and technically it's a surprise birthday party, not because he doesn't know about the party, but because he doesesn't know it's his birthday. He's got the D.
Oh.
And this show, one of the things
dementia.
We do,
yeah.
Well, I call it the D,
the
you
D?
Know, the big D.
Yeah.
One of the things we do in the show is we do create a safe space where you can laugh at something difficult to talk about.
Yeah.
So though I get those all O's and A's out because feeling sorry for someone doesn't really help.
Yeah.
Right? So the show opens up with this birthday party. And I asked my audience, if you two come, mm-hmm. I already know what I'm going to ask you to do. You're going to hang up my birthday banners, blow up balloons, because the character, me in the show, didn't plan well.
Oh.
So he needs the audience to help.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to be interactive with everybody.
Right,
that's a very smart way.
And then the characters turn into balloons.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Now, it opens here at the Den. Where has this play been playing before?
I did it for one night only at Mary Archie Theater. Mm-hmm. They let me do it after their American Buffalo.
Oh, that's an impressive
very supportive. Yeah.
1-2 punch. You described this experience working this job as a very pleasurable one, but I bet for a lot of people that would be a very taxing thing on a daily basis to work with people who are losing their thought processes, their memories. Why was it such a positive experience for you?
Oof. So it could be stressing. Of course, you know, I mean, I saw 30 people that I hugged, you know, die over yeah. the course of a few years. But my job was to
make
be
them
happy.
Smile. Yeah.
So taking on that task, and it was really easy because I didn't know them before they declined.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
That's true.
Decline.
Yeah.
One of the like reactions I get is like, oh, that must take a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. But really, it just takes imagination.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they think I'm their son at times. Oh. Or they think I'm their mom. And, you know, you just step into that.
Yeah.
And you smile.
What about your parents? Your parents around?
They're here. They're smiling.
Yeah. Are they coming tonight to the opening?
They're in Dallas.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah.
They couldn't fly in? They got planes now that go from Dallas to Chicago. I've seen it on the schedule. You didn't want them to? You didn't want them to see this tonight?
No.
But eventually.
Yeah, they've already seen it.
Oh, they have. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
All right. We will continue. We're going to take a quick break. John Michael, the one-man show, Dementia Me, and it opens tonight. You can go see him at the Den Theater, 1333 North Milwaukee Avenue. There's a theater within the bar, right? That's the Wicker Park area.
Yeah.
Am I right on all this stuff? Runs through September 12th, and we will continue after this. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and John Michael is in the studio. John is...
excited.
You are very excited. He's a one-man show artist. Is that correct?
Yeah, let's go with that.
A one-man show. It's called Dementia Me. And if we are going tonight, it's debut, 1333 North Milwaukee at the Den Theater. It is going to run on consecutive Mondays, August 15th through the 12th of September, 8 p.m. Den Theater. If we go there tonight, tell us what we're going to expect besides balloons.
Not that that's not enough.
No, it's fine. But what can we expect? Because is this? I'm looking at
the breaths it takes to blow up those balloons.
Sure, a lot of work goes.
I'm talking audience. Like, is it someone who's dealing with a parent that has dementia? Is it just anyone that wants to go there? Does this?
Oh, it's. I would say it's for everyone. I mean, of course, that's me being biased.
Right.
I'm, you know, happy with the story.
Four stars, says John Michael.
Yeah, I say
best
four
show
stars.
I've ever seen, says John Michael.
What a charming, good-looking performer.
Right.
But is it something we can, you know, get out of it ourselves if we're not suffering from dementia?
I guess one of the themes is losing control.
Yeah.
And how we look down on that. When I first get in there, I see someone who, soils himself or who, you know, has a knife and goes a little crazy with that knife.
Yeah.
Crazy was not the best word choice. I apologize, listeners.
That's and did right. this but, happen to you when you were working in the memory care center? You saw someone pick up a knife?
Of course.
How yes. do they have access to a knife?
So we gave them access of knives because my company I worked with that I was really blessed to work with valued a dignity.
Mm-hmm.
So giving someone a metal knife
to have their
and
dinner.
A metal fork is worth it.
I agree.
When someone does pick it up, we are trained to redirect. And what that means is, you know, distract, basically.
Take their mind off of what they're about to do.
You know, enter into their world, which is shrinking.
So during the course of the show, you're going to laugh at some parts. You're going to feel scared by some parts. You're
going to
be sad by some parts. Yeah, a little bit of everything. Good.
Yeah.
Did
he just say totes?
I did say totes. So my supervisor, I mentioned my previous job from this job was working at an adult boutique store, mm-hmm. right? Adult boutique.
Mm-hmm.
And in the neighborhood in Dallas. And my boss knew what it was. Because he was also gay.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me, John, these people, their worlds are shrinking.
Yeah.
So their memories that they're losing are their most recent memories. So some of them think it's the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Which means social norms, right? So
yeah.
there was a lot of racial slurs that were sometimes said, unfortunately. And then also, my boss told me to just, you know, keep my... mention of my boyfriend to myself, you know, because
maybe
it's not about me.
It's
not about me. It couldn't fit in their world.
Yeah, you're right.
And I remember 2 weeks into the job, the regional vice president came to serve ice cream cones to the residents with me.
Yeah.
And I'm serving an ice cream cone to this like darling lady that just like made me smile so much.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Oh, you young boy, you are so gay."
Oh.
She
and
said
I pause
that to you?
And I pause and I'm like in horror because I'm next to the regional vice president and she looked at me and she smiled. And then she looked at the resident and said, "That's right, John Michael's pretty gay."
Oh. How about that?
She figured it out.
They meant smiles. Though.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
happy. Of course.
And I was like, but it took me a while to like get it. I was like, what?
Wait a minute.
Can you throw some headphones on real quickly? Because John wants to comment on this. This is a caller named John. Hey, John, how's it going? John Michael in the studio. And Dementia Me is opening tonight at the Den Theater. Go ahead, John.
All right, you know what? I really like to catch this show because my mom's had dementia for 15 years. First of all, I want to thank him for even bringing any attention to this. It's fantastic because when you're dealing with it, it's grueling, it's bad, but sometimes it can be pretty funny. And I don't mean to say it in a bad way, but me and my brother and my sister take care of my mom, even though she's in a home now. And my brother and myself both look just like my father.
So she thinks you're dad, right?
Once in a while, if she's having a real bad day, she'll give you the old wink and say, "I want you to hop in the sack with me."
Oh, that is so. But God bless her. Seriously, that's all she knows. You know,
she's 90 years old, Wendy, and I swear to God, I mean, she hasn't been with nobody since my dad died in 67. And she'll look at me or my brother and she'll go, "Hey, how you feeling? You want to?"
Wow.
Well, so, you know, you said, I know it sounds bad, but it shouldn't. It's something wrong with our society that we're so afraid to laugh at things that scare us when laughing is the best thing you can do.
Absolutely.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, I think that's why what you're doing is great. And I appreciate you and I'm glad you're doing it. Thank you so much.
John, you're invited tonight, 8 o'clock.
All right, I'll try to do my best. I'm getting home now. I'm going to talk to the wife and see what happens.
Oh, breed the wife, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Appreciate
and
it.
If you'd like to go see this play, Dementia Me, you can go to johnmichaelplays.com. It's true. It's a no-no. People can't laugh. I mean, come on. You look at like goofy things that go on in your family,
sure.
And maybe it's a serious moment. You have to laugh about life.
It's the only way to get through. I'm curious about something. You said that when you got this job taking care of people here at the Memory Center, you'd never had a job that lasted more than 2 months. Why do you think that is? What do you think's going on there?
I know that's a very deep question.
Barbara Walters texted that in. That does not come from me. Barbara Walters just sent a text in.
It's probably because I'm really ADD and my cash drawer wasn't... never evened out, not because I was stealing, but because I got distracted.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, getting distracted is a wonderful thing to be able to do when you're working with people who have dementia.
Yeah, I would
imagine. Sure they just loved you.
Yeah.
Because you are a ball of energy. Can I just tell you that?
Many girlfriends, many kisses, many smooches.
I would think.
And they just want someone to talk to. And tomorrow, you know, someone else is going to come. They want someone to talk to. And they may not realize it's the same person both days. But it looks like you treated them with respect and put this Dementia Me together after 2 years of working at a memory care center. It sounds like you're doing a great thing.
Thanks.
Could this go to Broadway with music? Could this become a major motion picture? What will happen, do you think?
Only happens if Bill Leff comes tonight
that
and becomes a producer.
All right.
Yeah, no, totally.
That's what it hinges on,
you totally can come in, you know, co-produce
it. But you, I mean, when you're writing something like this, you're thinking to yourself, okay, it starts out as a one-man show, but it could become anything, right?
I definitely have heroes like Mike Birbiglia who've done that and who venture off from doing a segment off of This American Life and then turn that. I think it started out as a book, then became a show, and then became a movie.
Yeah.
But really, I just do this because, you know, I was bad at auditioning. I didn't get parts. People were always telling me you're too much like yourself, and I'm like, well, you know what? I want to be myself on stage. Mm-hmm. You know,
make it
so
happen.
That's what I do.
Good.
And to think you're giving some added relief to people who have to go home and deal with their folks or their cousins or their mates that have dementia. It's a little escape for them. So good luck with Dementia Me.
Thank you so much. JohnMichaelPlays.com.
You're good at the plugs.
Well done with the plugs.
And it opens tonight, 1333 North Milwaukee. It's the Den Theater at Milwaukee and Ashland. He is a whirling dervish.
He's
Can I just tell you that?
Yes, absolutely right. That's your sequel. Dementia 2, Whirling Dervish. You'll see. Thank you, John. We appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has in the news next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Bill and Wendy with you on WGN, 312-981-7200 is our phone and text line. Remember that segment we used to do where we would talk about stories about swarms of dragonflies and then also stories about people who fell off of cruise ships? Remember that segment we used to do?
Is it back by popular demand?
A lot of people have asked if we're ever bringing it back. I think today would be a great day. I have a story that fits each of those two categories, Wendy.
Can we do dragonflies? Because I have to admit, I don't like bugs, but I'm not really that afraid of bugs except for dragonflies.
What is it about the dragonfly that scares you?
They're big.
They look like they could just sting you and do some serious harm.
They're long, angular bodies and the wings, and they're big, as I mentioned.
Right.
And they're loud.
They can be loud. Yep.
Yep. You know, you're swimming in a pool. Very frequently, a dragonfly will hover over the water.
Right.
Even though you're in the pool and you feel safe, you have to go underwater because you think they will destroy you.
I don't know where they are in the food chain, do you? I don't know why we have dragonflies. I don't know what the dragonflies are doing to help us. I don't know what they're doing to hurt us. I'm not sure why they exist. I just know that if they were 100 times their normal size, I would hide under my bed and never come out, ever. Don't be alarmed.
They're
it
like
says.
Little helicopters.
Yeah, they're like pre-drone drones.
Yes.
It says, and this is the reason I bring this up, they're expecting the next few months to be serious in terms of dragonfly swarms in and around the city of Chicago. It says, this is from DNA Info, don't be alarmed if you see swarms of hundreds, if not thousands, of dragonflies all over Chicago for the remainder of the month.
Don't be alarmed.
I'm right? alarmed. I just read it and I'm scared. The bugs, which almost always in August congregate in giant masses, usually in the hundreds, can't sting because they don't have stingers. Now, when you look at a dragonfly, you're not thinking that. You're thinking this thing is going to land on my arm and give me a serious shot. They also won't bother you unless you try to hold one in your hand. And I'm the same way. If you see me down the street, I'm not going to hurt you. But if you try to hold me in your hand, all bets are off. There's nothing to worry about, says Doug Tarin.
You do have a stinger, though.
I do have a stinger. There's nothing to worry about, says Doug Tarin, the curator of biology at the Peggy Notbart Nature Museum, where many of us were forced to go on a field trip.
I like that place.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah.
What year did you go? Did you remember? When was your field trip to the Peggy Notbart Nature Museum?
I went in the last 15 or 20 years.
Oh, recently, yeah. Then. I think we were in fourth grade or fifth grade when we went there. Doug, by the way, also an administrator with the International Migratory Dragonfly Partnership.
That's a great organization. Would you like to be a card-carrying member?
I would love to be in that.
Or a wing-carrying member?
He says, worrying about them is something of an urban legend. The partnership uses citizen scientists to try and track and count dragonflies during their migration. That'd be a fun job, wouldn't it? During their migration north in the spring and then south in late summer. Unlike monarch butterflies, which travel to a few select trees in Mexico.
And who are beautiful and gentle.
You see a monarch butterfly, it cheers you up. That's a good day ahead of you. You see one of these dragonflies, it's not the same. No one knows yet where these dragonflies go. Well, I would say whoever's following them and tracking them is doing a pretty poor job then. They don't go that fast.
Yes, they can go 50 to 60 miles an hour.
A dragonfly?
Dragonflies are one of the fastest insects, flying 50 to 60 miles per hour.
Oh, I take back what I said then. I didn't realize that.
And dig this.
Yes.
Dragonfly eyes contain up to 30,000 individual lenses.
Yeah. Now think I'm about the more. Bill over at LensCrafters if you're a nearsighted dragonfly.
Did you read my mind?
Yes, I did.
Was my thought bubble visible?
Yes. We're still not sure, he says. This is Doug Tarin, the curator of biology at the Peggy Notbart Nature Museum, who also happens to be the administrator of the International Migratory Dragonfly Partnership, and that's how he gets babes. We're still not sure, but people have really enjoyed participating in the partnership of watching dragonflies, he said with a straight face.
There are nearly 2,500 different species of dragonflies.
I would not have guessed that.
I would have guessed one.
Did you ever see the ones, and I don't know, maybe this is all dragonflies, but I've noticed this about some of them. They have a metallic look. It's like a colorful metallic look, much like your dad's rod and reel would have looked back in the 60s or the 70s. It's got that same kind of a metallic
finish. I know
finish.
What you mean, because flies kind of have that, too.
A little bit.
Like a greenish hue.
Yeah, green or blue or yellow.
Can Joe jump into the dragonfly conversation? Joe, you know why dragonflies exist?
Well, I've always heard that they exist. Well, one of the reasons they exist is they eat 20 times their weight in mosquitoes per day.
Oh, then they're our friend.
Yeah, absolutely they are. Yeah, don't kill them.
No, all right.
And if you ever notice, dragonflies, they'll sometimes fly around hooked to the other one. I don't know. Is that mating? But they're always, like, the tail is hooked into the head of another dragonfly.
I've seen that. That's got to be mating, right?
Well, duh. Listen to you two trying to figure it out. Do you have kids, Joe? Please.
No, I don't. I'm still reading the book.
All right. I don't know what Bill's excuse is then.
I know. I didn't know.
Well, Joe, thank you. If they're mosquito eaters, I'm
on board.
Look out for the swarm.
What is known is that there will be lots and lots and lots of bugs, which, as Joe just pointed out, dine on mosquitoes and other flying insects that zip around Chicago. They travel along water courses like Lake Michigan's shoreline and the Chicago River because they don't like migrating miles over without open water. Yeah, when I think about where I've seen them mostly, it is either beaches or swimming pools.
Little hovercraft.
Yeah, yep.
That's because the mosquitoes are hanging out near the water.
So they go where the food supply is, right? Yeah.
We just go to Jimmy John's.
That's easier. Last year showcased an especially epic swarm of dragonflies that originated from the Lake Michigan waters. Terrence said that those types of numbers, which blanketed the Chicago lakefront, though, are unusual. Dragonflies spend most of their lives buried in the bottoms of waterways. What does that mean? Underwater? That's not true. I'm
the
sorry.
Bottoms
I'm
of-
sorry, Doug Terran, but you are lying. They spend most of their lives buried in the bottoms of waterways? Does that indicate underwater? Because I don't think that's right.
Well, buried.
That's what he's saying. I think he's messing with us. They can live for years as nymphs, which you did for a while. It was very, very lucrative time in your
can
life.
Can I tell you that was the best time of my life?
Your nymph years?
Yep.
The nymph era? I bet it was.
The nymph era.
Bring in some pictures of that, would you?
Shut up.
I would love to see the photos of that. Then they make their way up water vegetation, which was that's what ended for you, your nymph years, the same thing. They rest
not
on
a good swimmer.
No, that's going to ruin it. They rest on top of water plant life as they emerge from their nymph skin, and then they become an adult. Did you know that was one of the stages of being a dragonfly? It's not like pupa and larvae. They go from nymph to adult.
Well, so did I.
You did too.
Wait, Casey wants in. Casey, join the crazy conversation.
Hi. When I was little, my grandmother told me don't swat at the dragonflies because she called them sewing needles.
Oh.
And if I hit one, they'll come and sew my mouth shut.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah. Yep, she did.
That's
well, she
serious.
Knew better because she knew they ate mosquitoes and she didn't want you to hurt them.
There you go. I agree with that.
That's beautiful.
That's great advice.
Thank you, Casey.
Thanks, Casey. But haven't you, like, when one is disturbing you, like I've been at the beach where there's just a relentless dragonfly, you say to yourself, if I swat at this thing, it's going to come at me full force. But then it doesn't have a stinger. What could it do? It can't hurt you.
Well, it could fly in your eye and blind
you. Yeah.
Plus, they could just torment you. It could keep, dive bombing by your ears.
Right.
They really are loud.
Yeah, they can be. They definitely can be. All right, a quick trivia question for you, and I don't think you'll know the answer to this. The adult dragonfly, on average, lives to be how old? How long is the life expectancy of a dragonfly?
Didn't you just say 15 years?
No. Did I say that? I didn't say that. What is it?
I said 15 years.
5 months.
Oh.
That's it. That's it. Every day counts when you're a dragonfly, Wendy. A 5-month life expectancy. That's all you get.
I think I heard one.
Insurance companies won't even insure them because it can't pay off. There's no way. That again, according to Doug Terran, who also told us that they live at the bottom of waterways, and I'm pretty sure that's not right.
No, but they have been around 300 million years.
Whoa.
One prehistoric fossil had a wingspan of 2.5 feet.
Oh, no. That's what I'm talking about. I'm fine with them being an inch or two long, but if they got to be that size.
All right. The largest dragonfly is found in a tropical place you recently visited.
Costa Rica?
Yes. And it had a wingspan of 7.5 inches.
That's a good size. The bugs in Costa Rica, seriously, had a very prehistoric feel to them. I don't remember seeing any dragonflies, but most of the bugs that we would see didn't look like the bugs they had here. They were like experiments gone awry.
Like Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Female dragonfly lay eggs sometimes as many as 100,000 at a time.
Whoa.
They're nymphs.
That's the nymph life.
Dragonflies typically eat mosquitoes and other small insects like flies, bees, ants. They eat butterflies, Bill.
No, I don't like that.
They need to
sign a truce with the butterflies.
They are therefore valued as predators since they help control populations of harmful insects. They're usually found around lakes, ponds, streams, and wetlands because their larvae, known as nymphs, are aquatic.
Oh.
And while underwater, Bill, they go underwater. They eat mosquito nymphs.
I don't think I ever saw one go underwater. Did you?
Does everybody have a nymph version?
Yes, everybody does. They'll hover, like I remember seeing this.
Yes.
They'll hover like a third of an inch above the water, but I don't remember ever seeing them dive in.
Yeah, they go under and they eat tiny fish and polywogs as well.
Oh, thank God.
Even when they have matured to airborne insects, they catch mosquitoes and gnats in midair before devouring them. Surprisingly, dragonflies will spend only a very short part of their lifespan as actual dragonflies. They'll live as nymphs for up to 4 years.
Wait, it says here, now again, this is Doug Tarrant speaking, that they can live up to 5 months, but that says up to 4 years.
Well, in the nymph form, they live up to 4 years, shedding their skin up to 15 times, yet when they finally mature into adults, the dragonfly stage, they'll only survive a few months.
Oh, that's what, all right, so Doug Tarrant is in agreement with that.
It's better to be a nymph.
It is, isn't, that's what I, that's why I brought this story up, so you'd realize that finally. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then on to your calls and thoughts and complaints. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Dragonflies, friend or foe?
I'm looking at them in a whole new light now. I'm tired of running from them. I want to be their friend now.
Read the very beginning of that Peggy Notabart thing, because there are going to be swarms.
Yeah, in the next month here in Chicago, you can expect to see swarms of hundreds and sometimes thousands of dragonflies. That's big. I mean, I don't remember ever seeing a swarm that had more than maybe a dozen in it, but hundreds or thousands. That's serious.
Patrick, are you ready for the swarms?
Yeah, well, first off, a swarm is more than a dozen.
Oh, I didn't know that. What constitutes a swarm?
I think it's over 100.
Does it have to be over 100? All right.
I'm not going out of the house.
Second off, I used to catch dragonflies as a kid. No big deal. They don't bite. They just buzz in your hand because they have a huge wing. Third off, they're awesome. They kill spiders. They eat spiders. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
I've seen it firsthand. It is the coolest thing. It's like, you know how, like you said, they hover over the water?
Yeah.
Well, they do that like kind of like a hawk almost. They'll hover over plants and then just like dive down and pick off a spider. It's like the coolest thing I've ever
but
seen.
How do they do the spider in? Like, they don't have a stinger. Are they biting the spider?
They grab them. You grab them with their hands, well, whatever you want
their
to call
hands.
Them. Their
hands.
Their pegs, whatever. I don't know what the heck you call their feet.
Their what?
Whatever they are.
They're dragonfly hands.
They just grab it. They just start eating.
And they fly. Do they fly off with the spider in their beaks?
In their mouth? Or
yeah,
in
their mouth.
Hands, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. It's really cool.
Wow, I didn't know they had that ability.
Did you hear... Did you hear that our earlier caller who said his grandma explained that they were flying needles, and if you opened your mouth when they were present, they would sew your lips together? Because evidently this was a big thing in the 50s where you told kids that.
No, I've never heard that one, but, you know, grandma's saying, like I said, if she knows better than you, instead of saying don't hurt it, they're a good bug, they might say something like, you know, that's a weird one. I've never heard that, you know. To threaten your kid like your grandkid like that just
it seems wrong.
Yeah, but they won't hurt him. You're right, Patrick. Thank you so much for calling. Beware of the swarms.
So a swarm is 100 or more. Did you know? I didn't know that until just now.
What's a peck?
Don't know.
Bushel?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bill?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. I dragonflies aren't that bad. I have a Harley Davidson, and the cicadas are the ones that will hurt you.
I bet.
So you're going... You're going 50. That cicada's going 50. You hit them. You have a leather jacket. It feels like a bullet hits your chest.
I mean, I bet it does.
You feel it through the leather jacket?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're pretty good size.
A locust is not like 5 inches. You're holding your fingers.
The cicadas by us are about, what is that? Is that 4 inches about? Right about that size. We get huge ones by us.
Where do really you live? Big. Costa Rica?
I live in Jurassic Park.
All right. Well, they won't hurt us then. But beware of the swarms. Don't ride your bike when it's swarming out there.
You betcha. All
right. Be careful out there.
Dragonflies. I'd like a Pete the Dragonfly.
That would be timely.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a funny story. Several years ago, my cousin and my mom and my aunt and I were in the UP up in Michigan, and we got lost on a mining road and had the windows down. And like this Costa Rican prehistoric dragonfly flew in.
Oh.
And, well, the three of us ran out of the car. My aunt couldn't get her seatbelt off. And she's screaming back there, and the thing's buzzing. And we're standing outside.
But you know that if it did do, I mean, it couldn't hurt you unless your aunt's a spider. Yeah, there's nothing it could do to your family.
Bill, this thing was, I've never seen a dragonfly
that
this big. It was big. Like, I don't know, a couple inches or something. It's going, yeah, you're going to sit there calmly.
Sure. It is nerve-wracking. And Wendy, somebody sent us a picture of one.
On a parking meter, it appears, but it's almost bigger than the parking meter.
It's huge. They just took that picture earlier this year, I guess, earlier this summer.
Yes. Wow. So beware, the swarms are a-coming.
Yikes. I don't know if we have time for the second half of this. Do we? We always do this segment where we tell you the story of a swarm of bugs that's local, and then we also finish it off by telling you about people who have fallen off of cruise ships. I only have 2 minutes. Is that enough time?
Should we save it for tomorrow?
Yeah, because I want to do it justice. It's a horrible story. You say to yourself, if I'm on a cruise ship, I'm probably going to be safe. I'm not going to fall off of a cruise ship. But this lady in China did, and then what happened next is even more amazing.
Well, now you got to finish it.
She survived.
How many days at sea?
She was just 38 hours. A Chinese woman fell off a cruise ship and then drifted at sea for 38 hours before being rescued by fishermen.
Why didn't the cruise ship follow? Oh, they must not have known she was
off.
That's
the part I don't get. I've been on cruise ships, and unless the people you're on the cruise ship with just don't like you, they're going to notice that you're gone, right?
I have a great entrepreneurial idea.
What is
it? When you get on a cruise ship, everybody has to put like a little like beeper on yourself that is in command at the ship's hull. They're going to know when it goes off if it goes overboard.
Like
a GPS type
system,
thing.
A cruise load jack almost.
Yeah, people jack.
So it only beeps if you fall overboard.
Yes.
Okay, or
if you're X amount of yards away from, like, there'll be some beacon somewhere on the ship.
Yes, see, this is teamwork, guys.
Except what if you went off for a day's excursion?
Then you take it off and leave it on the ship.
And then what do you attach it to?
Your collar.
Yeah.
But then are you wearing the same shirt the entire time?
No, then you take it off and you put it on your bikini top.
Then what
if
somebody takes it off and attaches it to something and throws it off the boat?
Oh.
See, people would do that. People would go, I'm going to mess with them. I'm going to take it off you and whip it. I'm going to skip it on the...
Oh, man.
Well, that was a good idea in theory.
Sorry.
She reportedly fell off the fourth deck of a cruise liner. She fell what would be the approximate height of a 7-floor building, but the 31-year-old survived with only a few minor injuries. So she is alive. They found her. Fishermen found her after 38 hours at sea.
I would have been dead. I would have cried
myself.
How
long would you have lasted, be honest?
My tears would have drowned myself. Maybe 20 minutes I could tread water.
Right, right. So she must have fallen on some kind of, like, you can't just tread water for 38 hours, right? She must have fallen on...
Well, then you float for a while.
Yeah, for a little while. What
then
about
you
sharks?
Tread. That's what I would be worried about.
Sharks or dragonflies. That'd be my fear the whole time. Not sharks. I would be afraid of dragonflies. All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll find out what's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.